There he is! Ladies and gentlemen, WWE Hall of Famer, The Ultimate Warrior!
It was July 8th, 1996, 6,482 days ago, the last time The Ultimate Warrior was live on Monday Night Raw. And tonight, The Ultimate Warrior's back.
He is back.
The latest inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame, class of 2014. And we want to invite you to talk all about The Ultimate Warrior here tonight, ladies and gentlemen, on Twitter by using the hashtag Warrior. And as we noticed over the weekend, our WWE fans came and very vocal about the return of the Warrior.
Wow, wow, wait a minute. Oh, yeah. Warrior's back, and listen to this reaction.
You want to talk about energy. Remember the night at Sky Dome when he won the WWE title from Hulk Hogan?
WrestleMania 6.
Still the first man to hold both the Intercontinental Champion and the WWE Championship at the same time. And again, there's your hashtag Warrior.
Speak to me, Warrior! As I thought about what I was going to say this evening, it's been hard for me to find the words. That's...
Oh, this is going to be great.
Well, then, you shut up, Warrior, and let me do the talking. No WWE talent becomes a legend on their own. Every man's heart one day beats its final beat. His lungs breathe their final breath. And if what that man did in his life makes the blood pulse through the body of others and makes them bleed deeper in something than larger than life, then his essence, his spirit, will be immortalized by the storytellers, by the loyalty, by the memory of those who honor him and make the running the man did live forever. You are the legend makers of Ultimate Warrior. In the back, I see many potential legends, some of them with warrior spirits. And you will do the same for them. You will decide if they lived with a passion and intensity. So much so that you will tell your stories and you will make them legends as well. I am Ultimate Warrior. You are the Ultimate Warrior fans. And the spirit of Ultimate Warrior will run forever.
The Ultimate Warrior, the newest member of the Hall of Fame. And don't forget, guys, you'll get the chance to see the entire Hall of Fame class coming up immediately following Monday Night Raw tonight, right here on USA.
You're so revered by so many people for so many years. The Ultimate Warrior. It's great to see him back in the ring again. And great to have him in the...
Hey yo, and here we go with another edition of We Talk Wrestling with Addy and Mo. Hey yo, I'm Addy.
Hey yo, I'm Mo, and what are we doing, Addy?
I believe the Ultimate Warrior is dead.
Yes, and there's enough content, enough topics, I should say, because you used that word.
Please do.
Yeah, enough topics that we could go 3 hours without touching on the Warrior.
Just to get warmed up.
Just on booking, new people debuting, the business, you know, new world champion TNA.
As Mo hacks up along, I'll continue on here. Yes, there is a lot of news. I mean, it was the Raw after WrestleMania.
There's I tried to mute that. Did that get muted?
Yeah, I got muted.
Oh,
I just
God.
Watched all. It was like
you
watching.
Just saw.
Yeah, it was
like
watching
a cat regurgitating a hairball.
I was going to say, I thought I was watching the movie The Blob.
Just fuck you.
Up and down, up and down.
Well, it's like your mom.
Yeah, with more chins.
That'd be impossible.
I thought I was reading a Chinese phone book.
All right. Anyways, like I said, of course, we're going to put aside everything else.
The network.
Yeah, we're going to put aside all this other stuff, the news on the network, like say the business, everything, to simply
Ezekiel
talk.
Jackson.
Yeah, all the big stuff. To simply talk about Warrior. Now, a lot of people, of course, have been doing podcasts on Warrior and tributes and this different type of thing. So you're thinking you don't need this one, and maybe you don't. The thing about this was what we're going to be doing is we're not going to be looking at him in a way that is just colored by nostalgia. We're just not going to do that. We've been hard on him in the show in this past. We've been hard on him in blogs. And there's things that we admire. And there's positive memories. Mm-hmm. And then there's other incidences. And we're going to try and go through as best we can chronologically and cover all of this. And he may not come out in the best of lights at all times. So if you're not comfortable with that, I just want to let everybody know right now that's what's going to this one's going to be. Some people they just don't like to hear. It's about the memories and the nostalgia, and they just don't like to have that shattered. And I understand that.
We'll be fair.
We're going to try our damnedest to be fair.
Yeah. Also, Nancy Grace is a cunt. Sorry. Now we can talk.
Well, that's true, but you know she didn't actually say what you said. She said.
She didn't say it, but but it aired on her program.
Yeah, and you know, she's just a talking head that is reading off a monitor that has somebody in her ear and somebody else playing the graphics, and, you know, a lot of people working there are dumb. But anyways, even then.
They're all cunts.
Even then, it's not. You have to make a bit of a stretch to say what you think she said. It just happened that his name scrolled by at unfortunate timing, but let's not get into it this week, anyways.
No, it wasn't his name. There were many names, but that's all right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about.
But she still is.
Warrior,
I mean, I'm not going to disagree.
Formerly Jim Hellwig. Yeah, the whole show. Formerly Jim Hellwig, as he was born.
Mm-hmm.
We could talk right off that about him changing his name. I know on the Hall of Fame, Linda had said, you know, because his convictions were so strong to the character that he changed his name to the Ultimate Warrior. When in reality, he did it to
just
try to win
warrior.
A lawsuit.
Just for the warrior.
Warrior. Yeah, he's a warrior. Yeah. Just to try to win a lawsuit is basically what it was. It was, you know, we have the rights to this name. So he kind of said, okay, well, I'll go change my name to this then. Now what are you going to do? And then the courts ruled, well, you change your name after. So they win.
Yeah.
But thank you for changing your name.
I stayed to that.
That was nice.
Yeah.
Well, he stayed with it, but I mean, that's what it was. It was to win this, to win their lawsuit. Try
True.
To win the lawsuit, which
True.
He didn't do. But
let's go through though. I mean, let's go through. He started off,
with Rick Bassman.
Obviously, yeah. I mean, well, Rick Bassman found him. He was a bodybuilder. You know, already, of course, enhancing his body.
Yes.
Bodybuilder and Rick Bassman, who's some of the other guys Rick Bassman found?
Sting.
Mm-hmm.
John Cena.
Yes.
And known steroid abuser as well, Samoa Joe.
but he's somebody who's found a lot of bodybuilders and, And he had an idea of creating a team called Power Team USA. Also had a Strangler Steve DeSalvo, who wrestled here in Stampede Wrestling in Calgary quite often. Yes. And the Angel of Death. Anyway.
Strangler Steve DeSalvo was very well as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, and had a very uncanny look to the Ultimate Warrior, actually.
Absolutely did. And so he had this idea. So, like I say, he was an actual bodybuilder. He won some accolades as a bodybuilder. I think he was Mr. Georgia or something like that, you know. Yeah.
But, that's what it was, bodybuilder trying to get into pro wrestling. I mean, by his own admission, he said that he was, a green, he said something about 15 minutes with Red Bastien, and, it showed. His Hall of Fame.
He and Sting were trained for just a couple of weeks, and they decided to leave. They took off to a different territory, and so therefore, when they actually debuted in ring, I think under his heels, Dutch Mantel, Zeb Coulter, was their manager
in Memphis.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
and they were there's some there. They were in Mid South. It was the Blade Runners.
And it was an attempt in Mid-South to create their version of course, the Road Warriors.
Yeah. Warrior by his own, as I said, he makes no bones about fact.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, just to say, he makes no bones about the fact that he wasn't, Daniel Bryan or Bret Hart in the ring. You know, that he knew what he was. And what his role would be. And so even looking back, even when he talks about the Hall of Fame and he's trying to take this dig at Ted DiBiase that kind of fell flat, about his clothesline. He knew what he was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe he does now. I mean, there were some points where he certainly gave himself accolades that were not justified, later on too. But, we saw a man towards the end of his life who was certainly far more reflective. He was starting to show those signs. But anyways, despite some things. So
yeah.
So he showed up. He was known as Flash. No, sorry. He was known as Justice. As they showed up Borden was called Flash. Yeah, in Memphis, and then they changed to. The Blade Runners, and he was Blade Runner Rock, and of course Steve Borden was Blade Runner Flash. So they turned the baby face pretty quickly. Like I say, he was early on. Everybody raved about the attitude of Sting, and early on, people started talking about the poor attitude of Blade Runner Rock, and it was with him from the early part of his career.
Yeah, and Watts, there is that infamous story of Watts calling him out in the dressing room and getting him to go in the referee's position and try to teach him a little bit of respect, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing. He got in the ring. I mean, Watts came out of his essentially retirement, semi-retirement, to work with these guys to help try and teach them, but also to teach them respect because, he was told that Watts was the babyface hero in the territory. And, Warrior was told, okay, I'm going to do this and you're going to lose to me here and blah, blah, blah. And he didn't understand why he would be losing to this old guy, even though Watts was bigger than him, but he didn't understand why would I act like this? Why would I sell for this guy? And he wouldn't sell for him. Which is, again, if you understand Bill Watts and how huge he was and his importance in the industry and he is a legend, and he was a legend in that territory, to not sell for him shows, again, an early lack of understanding of the wrestling business. And, he had a lot of heat, too. Some of it wasn't fair early in those days, Sting, too, because they let go of, some very popular Gene Kaniski's son, I can't remember his name, but working there, was one of the guys left go, for instance.
Kelly?
It was something like that. And anyways, Dave Murdoch and Ted DiBiase and guys didn't understand why this guy's being brought in, why they're letting go of guys that are good hands, that are their friends, to bring in these guys. But the truth is, those guys, you know, I mean, especially Kaniski, there wasn't really any there wasn't upside. I mean, the guy was, you know, in his mid-30s. He couldn't become a main eventer. He was what he was. These guys could become main eventers down the road. So
I remember watching him in
AWA. But he had a lot of heat. And... Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, but he had a lot of heat with especially Dick Murdoch back then.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they would – so the Blade Runners would break up.
Yes.
And you had Rock, Blade Runner Rock, becoming the Dingo Warrior.
Yeah, I'm not sure who gave him that name.
In Texas.
Yeah, I don't know exactly who gave him the name Dingo Warrior. He didn't come up with it himself, but, I mean, Dingo, of course, is a form of wild.
Sure he didn't come up with himself?
No, I know. Well, no, somebody suggested it to him. Because there was somebody who had rustled in Australia, where, of course, the Dingo is a wild stray dog, kind of like a jackal type of dog. And but larger, and so I mean, they just thought it sounded cool, and he ended up with the name from that. So because he looked like a warrior, and then the guy was from Australia, so I can't remember exactly who it was, but that's how he ended up with the name the Dingo Warrior, which of course, like you say, stuck with him for a while there in World Class Championship Wrestling.
Yes, and then which title did he win in? Was it what was there like their North American or whatever their I don't think it was their main title.
He got to the finals in the tournament they had for the the World Tag Team Championship.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is where I started to hear.
Yeah, he did win the title. He defeated Warrior and Von Erich defeated Master G, substituting for champion Buzz Sawyer and Matt Bourne to win the title. So
it was a tag team champion.
It was Lance Von Erich. So he and Lance Von Erich were tag team champions there.
Okay. And that's, I mean, when I, and this is, I guess, when I started to hear
about the Dingo Warrior.
The Dingo Warrior.
Yeah, okay. in the aftermath.
Yeah. So, But he stuck around. He was you know.
Yeah, you know, he lost a tournament final to for the WCWA Texas Heavyweight Championship to Bob Bradley. So,
all right.
And then defeated for Bradley for the title a month later. So,
okay.
And then, of course, he left the territory holding up the title.
Yeah, shocking. Wow, what a reputation.
But then he was reinstated as a champion, and then he vacated it once more upon resigning. from WCCW to join the WWF. So
yeah, and this is of course where his superstardom takes off, joining the WWF.
So what was seen as a guy again who early on, he's a bodybuilder, he's charismatic, he's having trouble. In Memphis, he never connected to the crowd. Started connecting to the crowd there in Texas. That was where he started to understand. For some reason, he started connecting to the crowd. WWF, they brought him in. Like you say, he was seen as somebody with a lot of potential, but he was already a pain in the ass.
Yeah, it was a situation where
WWF, there was a lot of guys who were pains in the ass, and if they could draw money or they wanted, I mean, they would give him a chance. I mean, he wasn't alone.
Well, and the fact because he wasn't alone and because, I mean, this is your late 80s. We've collected all the talent from all the territories from the 80s.
Even in these smaller territories, yeah, they of course would continue to push him because he had potential, right? Right? Hello?
With Vince, right?
I'm sorry, I lost you there. Can we repeat that last thing?
Well, I was going to say that this was the guy they always said would help them compete with Vince.
Yeah.
You know, that was always the thought. But, you know, then he goes to Vince.
Yeah, in 87.
In 87.
April of 87, I think it was, that he ended up signing with WWF.
So, yeah. So, 24 years ago. Mm-hmm. Then he...
24? 27.
What? No, 27. Yes. Yeah, I told you. Gonna have some more beer.
It's 9:30 in the morning. It's a Saturday.
It is. 9:30, yeah. So, he comes in as the Dingo Warrior, at least at first. Yeah. Yeah, I think he was in a battle royal.
The battle royal that Bam Bam Bigelow won.
Yes.
He was just some basically unnamed guy in there, just some jacked up guy. And it wasn't unusual to see jacked up guys we'd never seen before, see them a couple times, and then they were gone.
Yeah.
That happened often both in NWA at the time and WWF, the two biggest promotions. So, yeah, I mean, he was in there. That was the first time I saw him was on that battle royal.
And I will say
– Sleep Wrestling.
And I will say that he caught my eye only because, like you said, it wasn't unusual for us to see jacked up guys, but it was unusual for us to see jacked up guys with face paint.
Yeah, that was – we knew of the Road Warriors, and Demolition had debuted at that point, but –
Demolition was
had been around for a while, but yeah, still, I mean, Demolition wasn't jacked like this, you know. I mean, so he did have that unique look. I mean, he was out of there pretty quickly in that battle royal.
Yeah,
You know, just a guy filling the spot. But the thing was, they didn't bring him in. The thought was, let's bring him in and let's teach him. Let's put him on the road with good hands. Let's put him on the really small shows. They were running three shows simultaneously across the country at the time. Let's keep him off TV because let's teach him. And the reason he got to TV was, I mean, he would show up and he was doing a lot of squashes, but he was working with guys like Steve Lombardi and these guys trying to teach him. And even though he wasn't on TV and didn't have a gimmick people knew, he was connecting to the audience in those house shows immediately. Like he, you know, his charisma was evident. And that's why they pushed him onto television much quicker than what was their original plan.
Right. No, and that's it. He that was the plan, was for him to go around and work with Val Venus and William Regal.
It's true, yeah. The guys who could teach the good
But you're right, that energy that he had and the running around and such was
And a lot of kids obviously in the crowd in the time, yeah, and he started to get over because let's face it, this guy looked like a real superhero. So the first time now, he showed up as the Dingo Warrior, then he was just the Warrior. Then I guess he became the Ultimate Warrior because he and Vince were talking about the character. And Vince just said to him, well, you're not like the Road Warriors. You're not like the modern-day Warrior, which was Kerry Von Erich. You're like the Ultimate Warrior. And it just kind of hit both of them like bing, bing, bing. Because they didn't want to actually use that name because the Road Warriors and Kerry Von Erich had that nickname. But that just came out. It was perfect. So what's your first memories of him? Now we can get into a little bit more memory and a little bit more backstory that we had to research. What are your first memories of him actually debuting and being used as the Ultimate Warrior?
Well, I mean, he goes in and his first feud was with the Mighty Hercules.
Yes.
Where Hercules tried to choke him with his chain, and they got into the tug of war, and they snapped the chain.
And that was kind of Hercules' spot in the company at the time. Hercules was this big jacked up guy who wasn't going to become a world champion or a champion anyway. But when they bring on a new guy who was big and jacked up like Billy Jack Haynes, this is the guy you feud him with. So now they did it with Warrior, basically.
Exactly. So,
and Hercules was the same style, the same, similar look. You know, I mean, not somebody who could really teach Warrior.
No, definitely not. In that level of the business, I think almost anybody could teach Warrior at that point.
But he wasn't himself a tremendous wrestler.
No, but he'd been there and. And he had the experience of being that. I think that's what Hercules could have taught Warrior would have been, okay, you're doing these things, you're doing this match. This is how you wrestle as a jacked up guy.
Yeah.
Because Hercules did that very well. He wasn't your catch-as-catch-can classic.
But he had his spots, though.
He was a very good jacked up guy, right?
He wasn't very good.
He wasn't a very good wrestler. He was a very good jacked up guy. There's a difference.
He wasn't even a very good jacked up guy. But anyways,
show there. And I mean, the memories there is, of course, then there's a showdown, WrestleMania 4. Hercules made the big mistake of not getting the fingers locked. And so Warrior was able to get the shoulder up at the last minute and score the flash pin in the, WrestleMania 4 against.
I think the most memorable thing in the feud is when they had this like tug of war with the chain, and they snapped the chain, and of course that was Warrior snapped the chain.
The 15-foot chain.
Yeah, yeah, and that was the.
Now Hercules had to hold it for the Warrior to break it.
Yeah, yeah, and it looked really awkward, and so did that WrestleMania 4 match, but it didn't really matter. Again, from there, he didn't really have another feud. He just showed up and squashed guys and was getting over, showing up, shaking the ropes, hitting a couple clotheslines, and squashing guys.
Yeah, he was Goldberg.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, at least Goldberg was beating guys who were higher up on the card and moving up the card. He just continued to squash jobs on TV.
Different era.
It was fine. Yeah, different era.
Yeah.
Different era. So
I look at the thing with that is there was a couple of notable moments in the WrestleMania 4 match that they didn't get the fingers locked. The other one is when the Ultimate Warrior broke the record for the 220.
Running to the ring, you mean, because it was so
running
far.
Running to the ring, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But, no, I mean, you go on.
That's a key
and,
part of his act is the thing. The running to the ring is a key part of his act.
Yeah,
you know, as dumb as it sounds. What's that?
Me and Gene joked at the Hall of Fame that, you know, he thought he did it just because he couldn't stop.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, this led him into SummerSlam, the first SummerSlam.
Yes.
So tell everybody what happened in the first SummerSlam in 89. Or 88, well, sorry.
Yeah, 88. It was SummerSlam 88. What happened was essentially Honky Tonk Man was set to fight Brutus the Barber Beefcake in a rematch from WrestleMania 4. On leading up to that, the storyline being that Outlaw Ron Bass attacked Brutus Beefcake after getting a haircut and was pissed off about his haircut and attacked him with Betsy and as well as the Spurs. And
Betsy,
there was,
of course,
there was
with
a big censor. X.
That was
the whip.
Betsy was his branding iron.
No, Betsy was the whip.
Oh, was it the whip? Oh, okay.
The whip, yeah. And anyway, there's a big censored logo over the thing where Beefcake was bloodied and such, so he was unable to compete. And so Honky Tonk comes down in the ring and just says, you know, get me somebody out here, I don't care who it is.
And Honky had held the belt at this point for almost 18 months, right? 16 months, was it?
The last day of his record setting reign.
Yeah.
Get me somebody out here, and all of a sudden the Warrior's music hits. Warrior does a couple of tackles. Honky does a great job getting in position for him.
That's the thing, actually, that I mean, I watched it again here a couple days ago. That's the thing that really stuck out for me was, I mean, how great Honky was. Because, I mean, the music hits and Honky's facial expression is so perfect. Like, oh shit, right? And then the guy comes in and he's running around. And he's completely – Honky has to move himself into position multiple times in his 37-second match just to make this work.
Yeah, because Warrior's just out there and, like, all they said is, like, okay, run to rope A, hit him. Run to rope B, hit him. Run to rope C, hit him. Press him. Run to rope D, splash him. And that's all Warrior, you could tell. That's all Warrior had in his head. He didn't care if Honky Tonk Man was there, if Honky Tonk Man was outside of the ring. Warrior, I have this feeling, was going to just run to rope C and leap in the air and do a tackle whether there was anybody there or not.
Yeah, like, no, that's the thing. That's the thing. You know, he was, but it worked with that crowd. He gets belt and then he runs off with it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a key thing. It really established him. Cause again, Honky Tonk Man had held the belt for so long and he beat him so quickly for it. And, went on to have a nice reign as IC champion, basically held the belt for the better part of the next 2 years. Better part of the next 18 months.
He held the belt actually for, outside the summer break, because he held the belt from SummerSlam to WrestleMania 5. It was the Royal Rumble.
20 months, I think, actually. For the next 20 months No, I didn't say that. I said he held it for the majority.
Yeah,
have some more coffee. You really need it.
The next, 20 months, you're right, outside of the summer. That's what I was saying.
I think he held it for like 17 of those 20 months or something like that.
That's probably, And he, because he,
Back when his belt meant a lot.
Yes, exactly. The Super Pose Down at the Royal Rumble, you know, sort of established what had happened was there was a little bit of controversy as the Ravishing One, Rick Rude, had won the Jesse the Body Award. And, of course, as a heel, and people were saying, well, the Warrior should have won as the babyface.
Yeah.
And, of course, Jesse got to pick, and, you know, it's a total – it's the Jesse the Body Award. Looks counted, too. He's got to wear face on his paint because he's ugly. But that started the Super Pose Down, and, of course, Ravishing Rick Rude would attack Ultimate Warrior with the weight – what do you call it? The warm-up bar and spray oil. I think Heenan sprayed oil in his face, and Rude hit him from behind. So then the WrestleMania 5 match was set up.
You know, when we talk about the best opponents of his career, I mean, Rude is it. Rude is his top opponent for his career.
You think so?
Absolutely.
I think it's Randy Savage, but
I think it's Rude.
But yeah, I mean it's not
both are both. It's pretty much those two though.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I mean, you had it's not Hunter.
No,
because that might be one of my favorite Hunter matches. But
that's probably his best match. Yeah,
yeah. But I look at yeah. Then you have Rick Rude and Rick Rude with the help of Bobby Heenan cheats to win the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania 5, significant Heenan's first title in the WWF. First guy that he managed to a title was Rick Rude.
Yeah.
In the WWF, and of course, then you had the Warrior out for revenge, essentially, because
well,
it was very
this
blatant.
Was big for me. I mean, I mean, like you say, this happened the next year at SummerSlam. Or was this
WrestleMania 5.
WrestleMania 5, yeah. He regained it at SummerSlam.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, when he lost this at WrestleMania 5, I remember watching that match because he's in the match with Rude, and Rude is really selling his back and the Warrior's power. And he's really working. I mean, Rude was great.
Yeah.
And he's really working hard to make the guy look terrific. And they had, of course, a bunch of house matches and everything, too. And the feud had been going on for a while, and it was a hot feud. I'll never forget when Warrior got pinned. I mean, it was basically because Heenan held his legs down so he couldn't get the leverage to kick out.
Yeah. Go for the suplex inside of the ring. Heenan tripped him and held down Warrior's leg. Yeah.
And I had a mixed emotions because, I mean, I was a big Warrior fan at the time. I had a bunch of emotions. I mean, part of me is thinking to myself, that looks stupid. It didn't look like that would be enough to keep him from being able to kick out. Another part of me thought to myself, well, I guess he's just not Hulk Hogan. Like, that was actually my first thought. Hulk Hogan would never lose like that. So I guess he's just not Hulk Hogan. Like, having his leg tripped and held down like that, they would never have Hogan lose like that. So I guess he's not going to be the next Hogan after all. That was my first thought at the time.
Yeah.
Like I say, then I kind of thought how stupid it was, and then... You know, and then I kind of thought, well, okay, it's just for a little while, they're obviously just trying to keep the feud going.
Yeah, because had Warrior won, of course, there wouldn't have been, there was really no.
But we just didn't see, I mean, Hogan never got pinned. This was not a clean pin, but still a pin.
Well, I mean, Hogan got pinned a year prior, but.
No, he got his shoulder up, and it was a referee that was.
Similar thing. It wasn't clean.
No, it's not similar.
Well, I mean, I guess it's not because Hogan never was pinned. They just counted it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This was actually shoulders were on the mat.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. Because there's already the thought that, hey, this guy's the next Hogan in my head. So that happened, and of course that led to SummerSlam.
And in many people's heads.
Yeah. So that led us off to the next to the SummerSlam, of course, where he regains the belt from Rude.
Yeah, is that the one where Roddy Piper moons Rude, which distracts him, that causes Warrior to...
Yes, and that causes the great Roddy Piper Rude feud. But yes, you're right, yeah, he moons Rude.
With Boobsy Heenan.
yes. And then, is this where Warrior transitioned after that to, to Andre the Giant, didn't he?
This is where, yeah, he did his Andre Summer... I think he did it. Did he do two loops with Andre?
He might have, yeah.
Because I thought it was the WWF champion, so I thought it was after Mania 6 that he did the Andre. I think, no, after the SummerSlam, I think he transitioned over to Dino Bravo.
Oh, I think you're right, actually.
because Dino Bravo and Hogan was with Earthquake.
That's right, yes. And, yes, you're right. Andre was somebody he took on when he actually had the belt. You're right.
When he won the belt, yeah. And, yeah, because what they did is they were doing, again, with the strength gimmick, was they were doing a push-up contest with Dino Bravo and the Ultimate Warrior. And so they're doing their push-ups, and everybody's like, oh, well, they're both really strong, da-da-da. And then Bravo says, I can do it with somebody, you know, on my back. And you know, Dino, on your back. And so, yeah, I'll pick anybody out of the crowd. And, of course, then they pick John Tenta to come out.
It was perfect because John Tenta was just pretending to be a crowd standing there. I remember the whole crowd standing up, looking around and pointing at this guy.
Yeah. Yes, that's you know? Right. And it's perfect. What's your name? John, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh. And so he comes in, yeah, and he squishes.
I had no idea he was a wrestler at the time. I didn't even think about him. I thought they just found the fattest fan they could.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, you weren't there. But they had, exactly. And it worked perfectly. And he squashed him, and he became the Canadian Earthquake. And so they did that run over kind of the loop, but he's still, I mean, I think still on some house shows.
Yeah, I mean, he faced Bravo and he faced Earthquake some, but I mean, they're really setting up Earthquake for Hogan. But
yes.
they still actually kept Earthquake really strong for a long time.
They did, because it was mostly Bravo and Warrior that would do the loop, and Earthquake was more of the bodyguard, right? Basically outside the ring.
And even when they actually had a match in SummerSlam 1990,
we're getting ahead of ourselves a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, we are, but I mean, I just talk about Hogan and Earthquake. They didn't pin Earthquake. It was a disqualification, and Hogan hit him with chairs, and he didn't go. He no-sold it, and
that's
all
right.
That stuff. They really kept him a monster.
No, that's right. That's right. Well, and then they had, and then they inserted the tugboat,
yeah,
in there. But we move on to the Royal Rumble. Really, because I mean, Warrior. What did Warrior do at? Was he going against Perfect?
Warrior, I believe was. No, I don't think he was feuding.
Because I believe it was the Survivor Series match. It was the Ultimate Warriors against the Perfect Team.
That might have been. That
where
might
you
have
had
been.
Warrior, you had the Modern Day Warrior, and you had the.
See,
Road
I remember
Warriors.
Him after he got the title against Perfect more, but I think you're right. I think it was. But I mean, after he got the title, he did face Perfect.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, and then you're moving on to the Royal Rumble, where it was the big, you know, it was almost exactly like when Randy Orton and John Cena stared at that WrestleMania logo a few years ago.
Except the crowd actually gave a shit.
Yes.
Hogan, I mean, that was Warren. It. I mean, there was a point probably two-thirds of the way through the Rumble where yes. It was just, yeah, they cleared the ring, and it was just the two of them. They turned and looked at each other, and Hogan was like, holy shit, this guy. And Warrior was like, yes.
To me, this is an iconic moment. The producer and I were watching – we watched a little clip of WrestleMania 6 their day, and I was like, okay. And I'm just like, we're watching, and there they go, and I'm like, crisscross. Hogan goes down. Duck under. Double clothesline.
Yeah.
Boom, right? Yeah. And then they both – they clotheslined each other.
And then I think it was Rude, and then – Barbarian hit the ring next.
Yeah,
and it filled back up again, and then Warrior ended up getting knocked out, and Hogan won the thing.
Yeah.
But this set up it set the roots for Warrior's crowning achievement.
But this is it, too, and this is where the build, I remember sitting there, and man, I was so pissed that...
You're drinking?
I was hammered, but no. I mean, I remember being so mad that
what 11
that we moved because we used to live in Ontario, and we moved to a year before this. We moved to Calgary here, and of course, WrestleMania 6 was in the Sky Dome.
Too.
I know WrestleMania 6 in the Sky Dome. I'm like, shit, I could have gone.
Yeah,
but yeah. They had this. This is the build to this is when I knew that. When you talk about WrestleMania 5, they never would have done that to Hogan. Mm-hmm. The build, I'm going, this guy's just not Hogan. And it
really?
Was, I'll never forget, it was the, when they were doing the moments when they were fighting Earthquake and Bravo. Mm-hmm.
Which they did on the main event.
Well, they did that, but no, in the yes, they did that in the main event, but then they had singles matches leading up.
Yeah.
And Hogan saved Warrior from a kibosh from Earthquake after right. the match. And then Warrior come out and saved Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
And when Warrior
both guys were pissed that the other guy even got involved.
Yeah, when Warrior saved Hogan, and Hogan was pissed, and Warrior just ran from one rope to another, and 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 then got out of the ring, ran around the ring, and ran to the back, that's when I said no.
Really?
Yeah, that's when I was like, that just, no. That's too stupid to be...
But the crowd was going nuts, and that was
well,
the crowd
would go nuts, but that was just for me. I was like, no, I don't, that's dumb. Like yeah. I don't want that guy to be the everything revolve around someone that's going to just do that.
Yeah, you know? I gotcha.
But yeah, I mean that was your build up. Is but
yeah,
is,
I mean the main event was obviously like I say it was the tag team. It was the two of them, tag teaming. That was also on NBC in prime time. Was also a key point in selling this storyline between Warrior and Hogan. And of course, I mean, it was very unique leading into WrestleMania 6. I mean, well, Addy will sit there and say, you know, it's not, that's when I decided I didn't want him. The truth was, I mean, the crowd was very split leading into Warrior. I mean, this was unique. This was the first time I can recall, ever seeing two top baby faces being the guys facing each other without, you know, a heel in the mix. And so it was brand new, something I'd never seen before, and it really could have not worked, but it did due to how over the guys were and the charisma.
And I think that's what it was. It was like, oh, I mean, Edge and Christian talk about it. You know, Christian was the Warrior guy. Edge was the Hogan guy.
I was there with Brett. We talk podcast partner of mine there, and we were there at the Corral. You were probably at the Corral watching it too. I just didn't know you.
Yeah, with the man they call B.
There you go. The fucker we call B.
Yes.
His new name.
His new name.
I like it. No, I mean, I remember he was for the Warrior. He was a Warrior fan. I was for Hogan. And it was like it almost split our friendship, dude. No, I mean, it wasn't quite that strong, but it was definitely like, yeah, I mean, he was sitting there and during watching this match, I'm cheering for Hogan thinking there's no way Hogan – like this was the first – like I didn't think Hogan could lose against Andre. I didn't think – this is the first time I was like, oh, Hogan could lose. I mean, Hogan never loses. I don't think he'll lose, but he could lose. And, you know, and that was what made it succeed was there was the little bit of doubt for the first time.
And the reason I had doubt myself as well is I was looking at, you know. If
so you were cheering Hogan. You were a Hogan guy. I never even asked you that before.
Yeah, I was a Hogan guy in this.
Was B a Warrior guy?
No, I think B was a Hogan guy too. B honestly didn't really care. You know, he liked both.
Yeah.
You know, he was just like, well, whichever guy. I mean, they're both, you know, I like both. So whoever wins.
And it was champion versus champion. Both belts.
Title for title, yes.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, and so it really – and that was part of it too was that where I thought – there was two doubts in my mind. One was the fact that Hogan was just coming off – this wasn't the four-year reign of Hogan. This was a one-year reign of Hogan.
That's right.
Hogan had kind of shown to be kind of – I don't want to say replaceable, but you know they let Savage
run with
it.
Randy Savage was in there. He did very well with that belt, both as a heel and as a babyface.
But they let Savage run with it, and so I thought, well, maybe they'll let Warrior run with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they'll just give it to Warrior for a bit. Maybe there's that. My other thing was Hogan doesn't want the fucking Intercontinental title.
I know.
Like, what's Hogan? You know what I mean? What's Hogan going to do? Like, why would Hogan want the Intercontinental? What are we going to do with the that was the whole, and it didn't matter to me. But then at the flip side, it's like, well, what happens when Hogan wins, or when Warrior wins? What are they going to do with that title? So there was that sort of intrigue there too. But I don't know. I looked at it like there was a seed of doubt definitely there. And being, you know, whatever, you know, 12 years old or whatever, I never thought about, you know, this is going to be a shitty match or, you know, the how many stars is this going to be?
No.
It was just like, you know, in hindsight, we can look and see that they definitely overachieved. But
Well, again, I think Hogan's underrated, as he may not be the greatest technician, but his understanding of ring psychology is as good as it gets. Like, he's a very good ring psychologist. And
a very good jacked-up guy. He's like Hercules.
And the other thing is, this match, I mean, it was really a remarkable match. It was great then, and it holds up. And they didn't – I mean, people go, well, I mean, John Cena did that with the Great Khali. I go, yeah, but they went outside the
Nobody
ring.
Nobody says that. Nobody says that.
No, people talk about what a good match he had and how.
No, he did have a good match with the Great Khali. Nobody's talking about it.
Okay. Well, either way, I just want to use this as the comparison, just saying, well, I mean, talk about the difference is that they went outside the ring. They used a lot of gimmicks. They used, you know, they brawled and they used a lot of weapons and whatever, right? And this was this didn't have this. This was a wrestling match. It was the two guys, and it was one of Hogan's greatest performances ever. He was tremendous. Like I say, his ring psychology, and I think I suspect, I don't know this for sure, but I suspect that Mr. Pat Patterson also deserves a lot of credit for this one.
I think so. And
the rehearsals they ran the day before and everything, and so
I think so, and it's also I think that John Cena. Khali match is a fair comparison because Parts Unknown right next to Punjab.
Makes sense.
It does. So, but I just look at that match, you know, it again, you know, Hogan playing his games, right? You know, making it about Hogan, you know.
And, of course, you, on the Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD, Hogan talks about how, you know, he went and grabbed the belt and put it around him and then got in the cart and left. And he says, well, they told me I was supposed to do that. And I said to him, you know, if I do that, the crowd's going to be with me, not him, brother. But they told me to. And then afterwards, the crowd was with me and not him, brother. And, you know, I was like, I told them, I said, you know, I don't want to say I told you so, but I knew it.
And you know what? That's good because even though, you know, we're doing an Ultimate Warrior tribute show here, we have managed to fit in the Hulk Hogan bullshit of the week,
Nobody knew he was going to do that. He decided to do that himself, to get himself over.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, I mean, then you really look at, again, you're transitioning into, you know, Hogan being Hunter and Warrior being Benoit, in that you have this summer of a new champion, but it's all about the other guy and his program. It's all about Hogan and Earthquake, and Earthquake squishes Hogan on the Brother Love show to put him off TV for a while so that Warrior can, you know, well, let me just sell this injury,
but the thing is with Warrior, the first guy they went back to was a guy he had already beat. Was not a fresh and this is why I probably think of him as his greatest opponent in Rick Rude. But I mean, he went back with Rude, and you know, which we had already seen. So it was tough to get that to draw for the world title now, WWF title, even though, because we'd seen it as the IC title for so long, and they'd already made all the loops and everything.
And the main issue with that one was
Wrestling's just started taping for me.
Oh, good. The thing with Rude, and the problem with Rude, I mean, I know the idea, okay, we'll put it in a cage because no one's seen it in a cage.
Well, in the SummerSlam, that's what they did, the SummerSlam 1990. Yeah. But on the house show loops, they didn't, obviously. It was just matches. Or was that actually in the cage? That could have been.
I don't know if that was in a cage or not, if they did that maybe again to try to draw.
Maybe they did it after or something like that. Who knows?
Something like that. But, I mean, the fact was is that because Warrior had beaten Rude, you know, the whole thing was that Rick Rude is the only guy to have beaten Warrior.
Yeah.
And that was supposed to be the draw. But then it was like, well, then Warrior got his win back already. So, you know, if Warrior had never beaten Rude, but Rude had beaten Warrior, that's maybe a different story to tell. Well, it is a different story. Yeah. But
speaking of stories, there's a great story about Warrior, of course, working with Rude. And, of course, Warrior was stiff. And a lot of people early in his career just chalked it up to him being green. And then later on, people just chalk it up to him being reckless or to him not caring about the other guy, just wanting to put himself over. There's a story with Rude where Rude says to him, you know, would you lighten up out there?
Mm-hmm.
A Warrior turned to him and said, I don't have to lighten up out there because I'm the Warrior. Got right in Rude's face backstage and did this, not on camera.
Yeah.
So Rude fucking decked him, knocked him out. From then on, Rude was able to work with him in the ring and get him in position, and he was very, very easy to work with for Rude. Yeah. So that's kind of a typical, again, typical Jim Hellwick story.
Well, and I mean, you say what you will, but he you know, again, not growing up as a bodybuilder, not as a wrestling guy, wrestling fan. I mean, he was in it for himself, and that was very evident, you know. And in some ways, that's you know, in a cutthroat business, is admirable, but it does take you know, in the ring, you got to cooperate. It takes two people, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I understand the mentality of I got to get myself over here. I mean, people talk about Roddy Piper, right? And as a Roddy Piper, you know, lose Hogan, no, right? No.
Roddy Piper wouldn't sell people's punches a lot either, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so, I wouldn't either, but it's one of those things that, you know, as much flack as Warrior takes, it's not unique to him in the wrestling business, because in many ways, if you don't, you know, you end up like, you know, just an undercard guy, right?
Yeah, but to turn to the guy in the back and say, you know, I'm
well, champ, no, that's yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just all of it. But I mean, I understand. I understand what you're saying, though. It's still not what you do. I mean, you can get yourself over without having to be reckless on the other guy. And
And you don't have to, yeah. And the belief in terms of fantasy and reality backstage, you know,
yeah, that's all just that stuff. So anyway, so yeah, but so like you say, Warrior kind of faced Rude. He got past that, and that's where he got Andre. Then,
you know what? The more I'm thinking about it, it can't be, because it would have to be after five, because Andre turned babyface.
That's right. It must have been for the Intercontinental title. It must have been after he faced Rude. I think that was the next guy he faced.
Because I just remember Warrior with the or Andre with the face paint, yes, on the Brother Love show.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so the ultimate giant.
That's right. And of course, he attacked him from behind at some match or something like that and choked him out.
Saturday night's main event.
Yeah. So, I mean, this led to, I remember the after match. Now, there is a match out there. I don't think they had a match on Saturday night's main event, did they? They did have a match that was from Madison Square Garden that's out there that you can see.
Yeah.
That's like a 7-8 minute match. I believe it ends in a no contest. But I remember picking up the After magazines and seeing main events of these house show loops that Ultimate Warrior was beating Andre, which was amazing enough because Andre still didn't lose much, but he was beating him in 30 seconds.
Yeah, it was like 17 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I was always thinking to myself, like, what the hell is it? You know, I mean, and then we were like, oh, it must be because the Warrior's awesome. They're really pushing him. And later on, it turned out that we found out that that was a little bit of it. They were definitely booking him to win. And Andre didn't mind because Andre didn't care at that point. But Andre did say to him at the house shows, and Bobby Heenan tells this story, you know, that he came running at the Warrior, ducks the one clothesline, and he comes around the other side and hits Andre so Andre can fall back and do that spot where he gets his arms tied on the ropes.
Right.
He loved doing that spot. That was to him, that was hilarious and one of his favorite spots. And the Warrior did it, and boom, and he did it the first night. And Warrior came to him and said, boss, could you hit me not quite so hard and come not quite so fast. I was not quite turned around in position.
Yeah.
You know, and the Warrior came at him the next night, came even faster. Boom. Hit him. Hit back there. Boss, would you mind? Again, you were even faster. Could you mind not hitting me so fast? Boom. The next night, faster still. Hit him as hard as he could.
Yeah.
Andre had enough. The fourth night, the guy turns around, does it, running as fast as he can. Andre just put his fist out and Warrior ran into it and knocked himself out.
Yeah.
And after that, the next night came slow, like half speed, barely touched him.
It's the same thing as with
Rude, right? So, I mean, you know, Andre, though, the word came out that the reason that those matches were going 30 seconds was Andre hated him.
Yeah.
And Andre didn't want to work with him. He didn't want to be in the ring with him at all. And he just said, no, cut in there, have him clothesline me, pin me, and I'll get out of there. Because it was all about selling the matches of what they were billing to the towns. Once the match actually happened, it didn't matter. So the reason those matches were short, yes, they wanted to put Warrior over and he was going to win, but they weren't meant to go 30 seconds. So Andre just said, I don't want to work with him. I don't like him.
No.
Nobody liked him.
I shouldn't say nobody liked him. Oh, Jim Powers liked him. Owen Hart roomed with him.
That's true. Owen Hart roomed with him. That was early in his days when Owen Hart was the Blue Blazer and before he really took off and became a star, though. And when we talk about him when he's a champion. Now he's taking limos to the events. Yeah. He's not hanging out with the other boys. You know, he's
aloof.
Aloof, yeah.
And, I mean, exactly. You're talking about someone that, again, and this goes back to...
I mean, Hogan had his own locker room, but he shook everybody's hand, and he occasionally hung out with the boys. Occasionally. Now, it was a political move to keep his place with them, but he did it at least. Warrior didn't even do that. Warrior didn't shake hands. He thought that he didn't understand why that was part of the tradition. He didn't get it. Didn't like it. And, like I say, he didn't even hang out.
Well, his whole thing, again, he's looking at it. He's not a wrestling guy. He's an outsider that's come in, that's very successful in terms of his push and his look and you know, what he's achieved. But, you know, he's also the kind of guy that, you know, you go around and you shake everybody's hands. Why? Because that's what we do. Why? It's a tradition. Why? I don't know. Well, then I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
If you can't explain something to him, he's not going to do it. And that's you know, I don't have a problem with that, you know, quality. I mean, it rubs a lot of people the wrong way.
It's a matter of respect, is the thing. It's a matter of respect. I mean, you know.
But you understand where he's coming from.
Let me tell you something. If your job, you were told every day you had to go in and shake hands with everybody and they couldn't explain to you why, you'd probably still do it, right?
No. No. I need an explanation, because they would be able to explain it to me. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Is that they would be able to explain it.
I'm
to
sure
me.
They explained it to him. I'm sure that they explained to him because the tradition. They say it's a tradition. It's about letting everybody know that we all work in this thing together. That yes, one person can be at the top of the card, but he doesn't look good and he doesn't get over in his matches unless the other guy sells for him. Because at the end of the day, we're all part of a team. So we shake everybody's hands to thank them and show respect.
He thought that was stupid, and he stuck to that.
Well, he did stick to that. I mean, I'll give him that. I mean, I think it's disgusting, but he stuck to it.
Whatever. I mean, again, at the end of the day, you're. I mean, it's par for the course, right? I mean, it would be something that I would understand, and if people get pissed at him because he didn't shake my hand, like, I mean, we've heard that with the Young Bucks and with other guys.
He also didn't hang out. Like I say, he took a limo. He kept himself apart from everybody.
Yeah, and that's, you know what I mean? And that's, again, that's par for the course here. But and the difference would be, okay, I guarantee you, if he took the limo, he didn't shake the hands, he was aloof, and they were selling out every night, and business was better than it was with Hogan, nobody, you know, people would grumble, but not as much.
You're right. You're definitely
and,
right.
And the fact of the matter is, what hurt the Ultimate Warrior was that the Ultimate Warrior, as the WWF champion, was not a huge – it wasn't a draw more than, let's say, Randy Savage or Hulk Hogan.
No,
he wasn't. It was a step down. And so that was, again
– he worked with Rude. He worked with Mr. Perfect. Mr. Perfect had already lost – numerous times to Hulk Hogan. So he was seen as a guy who already couldn't beat Hogan.
But he didn't really work with Perfect that much because Perfect was the Intercontinental Champion winning the tournament from Chico Santana when Warrior had to vacate.
They worked around the house. Right?
They had matches. Yeah. But I mean, the thing is that, if Warrior had been this outstanding success, it's one thing. But the fact that you come in and you decide, no, I don't want to do this, and I want to change how we do some things, if you're not being a success, you can't change these things.
No.
Right? And so that's kind of where he fell flat.
Oh, I just noticed you're wearing a Hulkamania shirt. That's awesome.
I am. He doesn't want to.
You have a Warrior shirt, don't you?
I do. I wore it for the Hall of Fame night.
Did you?
Yes. So, anyway. I think. I don't blame him for what he thought. And I mean, quite frankly, a lot of times it is a stupid tradition to shake everybody's hand as you walk through the thing. It can look ridiculous. I understand that. But, they said, and if you're taking a business to a whole new level, maybe you can change that. But you didn't, so you can't. Right?
Steve Austin didn't want to change it.
No, of course, and it probably won't. I mean, that's fine. But the fact is that if Steve Austin did want to change it, you're damn right Steve Austin would have changed it. That's what I'm saying. Is it? But I mean, Warrior, no. He wanted to change it. Didn't want to change something else. He didn't have that pull, because it's like, okay, you know what? It's very clear after the summer. You know, we're already figuring out how to go back to Hogan.
And right. Which is what they did. He lost the title to Iraqi sympathizer Sergeant Slaughter at the Royal Rumble.
Yes.
Because he had and but this was due to Randy Savage interfering in the match.
Yes, and Randy Savage smashing the scepter over
the ultimate. What caused the rift between Savage and Warrior? There was something Warrior said or something that caused Savage to get all pissed off.
What, in storyline?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it was the Macho King.
Hold on, my dog deciding to... You go ahead and talk. I'm going to try and shut this dog up before she barks here.
Well, I mean, it was a situation where... And it was weird because Sherry, basically Sensational Queen Sherry at the time on that ramp, it was seducing the Ultimate Warrior into trying to give Macho Man, Macho King, a title shot against Warrior. So she's just, you know, trying to fuck him on the stage. And he said no. And so that got Savage pissed. And so Savage smashed the scepter over there. And Sergeant Slaughter wins the title. And then you move on to Savage and Warrior. And I mean, this is, again, the title meant so much in storyline at the time that, you know, the fact that Savage cost Warrior the title was so heinous that they're going to have a match at WrestleMania and the loser has to leave wrestling.
You know, I remember I was watching that again, in preparation for this, watching the Royal Rumble match with Slaughter. And, again, there was plenty of issues with Slaughter, again, working with the guy in the ring and trying to get him in position, trying to get him to understand. He was always telling him, you know, slow down, you're doing this too fast, here's the psychology. And Warrior just wouldn't listen to the psychology. And I can understand why, because he had already become world champion, sold all this merch, and was over and making all this money without having to learn it. So yeah. Why should I have to learn it now? And
exactly.
So, but it was frustrating for a guy like Slaughter. You know, who obviously was a different body type and wrestled a different style. And, but I'm watching this thing here again, like I say, and when Warrior gets hit by the scepter from Savage,
yes.
I don't know if they added a sound effect, but boy, does it ever pop.
Yeah.
And it seemed like something, like, I don't know what material they used, but it looked painful.
I remember that it was, it looked like it was, it was hard to gimmick that thing. It was, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a pop. But, yeah, that, I mean, then you get Savage and Warrior and loser has to retire. And, you know, they had a long match. One of my favorite Ultimate Warrior matches for the drama of it all. You know, it was the first time now. I mean, it was basically what I like to call the first ever flippy-doo match that I saw. Where this is your textbook Ring of Honor match where they do their finisher six times. You know, Savage got up and did, you know, like 3, 4, 5 elbows on the Ultimate Warrior. The Ultimate Warrior pressed Savage.
Lesnar and Taker, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? And so pressing, you know, Savage over his head and doing the drop and the splash a few times, you know. And then he was outside the ring and he was asking himself, "Is this his destiny?" As he looks at his hands, and I mean, you got the story part of it, and of course, then the Warrior pins him with his foot on his chest.
And Savage was the perfect guy to work with Warrior in this situation because Savage was an incredibly detail oriented human being. And to a fault, people, and it annoyed some people, but in this way he could choreograph the exact match with Warrior. And he was a big enough star and respected enough that Warrior would listen to him.
Yes.
And that's why this match was so solid. I mean, and you say it's a great match. To me, the drama after the match with Elizabeth overshadows the match itself.
It does in history, but the match itself,
it was a great match. Great
the match. Whole package. But, I mean, yeah, and again, it does show. I mean, the Warrior talked about being blown up, you know, in his Hall of Fame speech a lot. And you know, and took some flack for it. And this goes back to some of the bone-chilling things that he says in his, you know, his Hall of Fame speech, where, you know, the human body can be pushed.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just push it, man. And you can push it and push it and push it. And it's like, I remember thinking, watching it, going, you really can't.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, but okay, I understand what he was saying. But I'm thinking, like, unfortunately, it's sort of come to pass. But I remember thinking that in both, say, the Hogan match and the Savage match, were probably his two most high-profile, biggest, longest matches. You know, talk about how a Warrior or Rude, rather, being one of his best opponents. But in terms of, you know, 20-minute matches, let's say, he didn't have many.
No. You know? He went longer with Rude than most guys, but...
Yeah, but it was still maybe, you know, if it was 14 minutes, I'd be surprised. Yeah. But, you know, it's so... When you do this, I mean, in both...
I think the cage match at the SummerSlam went at least that long, but...
Could have been longer. I do remember a lot of rest spots in that one. I just remember in the Savage and the Hogan match that again, not an all-time catch-as-catch-can classic here, but...
It's storytelling, though. It's storytelling.
And Warrior held up more than his bargain in both of those matches.
Yeah, he was in position. But like I say, they were choreographed greatly for him by people he would actually listen to.
Yeah, but they worked, you know?
Yeah, and so they worked, exactly.
And it goes back to exactly what you said. I mean, when he takes flack for not respecting or not doing this and not doing that, like, I mean, he is one of the top 10 wrestling stars of the last, you know, 40 years, if not ever.
Fuck that. No, he is not.
Yes, he is.
God, he also, no, he isn't.
Yes, he is.
Okay, and then Goldberg is too.
I'm going to go with Hogan, Austin, Rock, Savage, Flair. I'm going to put Warrior in that category.
God, no.
I'm putting Warrior ahead of guys like Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart
God,
and Triple H. I mean, this guy is...
No,
is
not even
the
close.
The word
nowhere near Bruno Sammartino. Nowhere near Nick
Sammartino's in there, too. I'm not putting him in order. I'm just telling you, and you got...
He's not top 10. He's not...
Suck my dick. Walk around. Go downtown and ask who the Ultimate Warrior is. Go downtown and ask who Nick Bockwinkel is, and you'll go, I think he's my accountant.
No, I'll tell you what. Now, because of the different generations, sure, you go downtown, you ask who Ultimate Warrior is, and you ask who Nick Bockwinkel is, you'll get that exact reaction. But if you go down 20, 25 years ago and ask who Nick Bockwinkel is, you'll get the exact same reaction as you get for Warrior today, and you'll get the exact same reaction for Warrior 25 years from now. That's bullshit on a stick. He's not even close.
Nick Bockwinkel. The guy showed up,
and again, it's a different era and everything like that, but in different everything. But I mean, is he that big a star? No, because you know what? Because he had a chance at the belt, and he didn't even. He drew better than Kevin Nash, but you know what? I put Kevin Nash ahead of him. Are you kidding me? And I wouldn't put Kevin Nash top 30.
No,
are you shitting me? Warrior's not even close. Yeah, he didn't draw.
Top 10.
He's memorable. He's a memorable gimmick, but he's memorable for many of the wrong things. And you know what? That's not even true.
He's not memorable for many of the wrong things is the funny thing, because
he's memorable for what you just talked about earlier, when he comes into the ring and does it, runs the four corners and then runs around the ring after saving Hogan, runs away. He's memorable for that type of stupid shit. People laugh at
him. You and I, he is. But to Joe... Joseph Bag of Donuts, Joe Blow, he's the Ultimate Warrior, and he's a guy that people grew up on.
I can tell you this: people I knew had just as big a reaction, and as many people I work with and know had just as big a reaction to the death of Paul Bearer as they did to the Ultimate Warrior, and all of them had a bigger reaction to the death of Randy Savage.
Yeah, there definitely would have been a bigger reaction to the death of Randy Savage. I give you that.
He's not top 10. Please.
He's top 10. But no, the Ultimate Warrior, I mean, when he comes in to...
He had a 3.5-year period. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, very memorable. He's an iconic character.
He's memorable for 2.5 of that. And he didn't.
And I look at, well, when we go now, this is the part that we're getting to, is that he's beaten the Ultimate Warrior, or he's beaten Randy Savage, right, in the Must Retire match. And now you're getting to that really being, I don't want to call it the peak of his career, but it's the top, it's the last big moment, from him being really on top. Cause you come back down now, and now he's having, a thing with Jake Roberts and Undertaker. And
let's not forget the incident he had at SummerSlam 91 where he and Hogan teamed against
Shiki and Slaughter, right?
Yeah. Where right before, just as the match is about to go on, this is the story that Vince McMahon tells and Slaughter, Hogan tells it, everybody tells it. He denies it, of course, and says, oh, I have the paperwork, the legal paperwork. Because starting in 91 is when the lawsuits with him and Vince started happening.
Yes.
And even while he was employed with him, they started lawsuits and letters back and forth and these different things. And he apparently, according to everybody but him, he right before the match at SummerSlam, the main event was going to go on, he said, I won't go out there unless Hulk Hogan, or unless I get paid exactly what Hulk Hogan gets paid.
Right,
which was I believe $550,000 was what he was supposed to get paid, and everybody's like, what are you doing? You're not going to work. We've advertised this. You've got an agreement. You're going to get paid. You're asking to get paid for what Hogan's getting paid tonight and going forward, at least what he's getting paid. But Hogan's the champion. You had your run as champion, and you're not even. And Hogan's been here longer. Hogan built it. So even if you're at his level, there's still a tenure thing here. So.
It would very much surprise me if, and again, the way that the story is told is that this comes out of the blue. And that's the part that it doesn't jive with me.
Oh, he's probably asking for more money, but he held them up out of the blue right before the match.
I don't know. Well, yeah, because he
probably, everybody else is already in the ring or about to get in the ring.
I tell you how this goes. I tell you how I see
this
going.
I'll tell you what everybody else is saying was how Sheik could go and bring him in the back room with all of us and let's have Sheik shoot on him and break his leg because Sheik could have kicked his ass.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think maybe why Sheik was put in that to begin with as Colonel Mustafa was because this is when Warrior started to, like you said, as he's employed, start the threatening and the, you know, he's not the champion anymore, but he's this prima donna kind of guy that it's like, okay, well, we're going to do this tag match. Who do we put in with Slaughter? Let's put Sheiky in because I could see Pat Patterson. Let's put Sheiky in. Mm-hmm. If something goes wrong, you can count on Sheiky, right? But I think that the way I see this story, and I've heard the story from both sides of it. The way that I see this story going down is, Warrior starting in, you know, I don't know when, let's call it June, you know, to say, hey, we need some more money here to do this, right? And and I see Vince, you know, being Vince and trying to manipulate this situation and go, absolutely, pal, let's talk about this, da-da-da-da-da, right? And trying to quell this and you know, let's get through the match and then we'll talk. Kind of thing, right? Just wanting it to happen, right? And Warrior being Warrior, you know, again, not, you know, not someone, I mean, say what you will, he's not someone you fuck around with, you know, he doesn't care about, he's not a fan, he's a businessman.
Yeah, so, and this businessman fucked himself over here, because what happened is, Vince finally, he's advertised that he can't not have the match, he gives in to him. He agrees to pay him. He goes out there. He has the match. They have a pretty decent little match for what it is. He comes back. He immediately fires him. Then he pays him. And that's it. He's gone for like, what, 7 months, 8 months?
He's gone for 7 months, yeah. So, yeah. But again, yeah. And
complaining
then,
about, I think it's, like, there was one kid that asked for his autograph, and Warrior blew him off because, you know, that's what baby faces do. And it turned out that kid was the fan, or was the son of one of the station owners who carried the programming, and so he had to send a video apologizing. So he's suing over things like that the WWE is making him send videos. So, and again, no sense of responsibility for himself and his own actions. I'm going to read you just an example of one of the letters, or one of the things that's in one of the letters in 1991 that came out. He says the veterans you spite, and this is the exact quote. The veterans you spite are the very ones who will fuck it up for you. No matter I listened. I would go to the ring and push myself to the brink of a heart attack, and you would say, when you go to the corner, smile. You smoke of Ultimate Warrior, appealing to all. Old, young, ugly, beautiful, fat, skinny, white. A character who would show up and downs emotions and intensities, sensitivities and cold-heartedness when it was needed. Like a yo-yo, I blive so I could be the one. Where the hell are this man's ups and downs? Total jugular, vein popping, yelling at all times. Is this the total picture, character, or presentation that can be the one? I learned with you to show intensity at this level, but also to show just as much intensity with the look of my eyes or the whisper of my voice, or even better, extreme intensity and total silence. I don't know what the guy's saying. Again, I talk about you have to at some point begin talking about the man's mental stability. And there's been enough stories even up to this point, though this is where it seems to go to the next level. And yeah. 1991 is where it seems to really go. This is where I started thinking to myself, I wonder if the guy's just mentally, if there's something undiagnosed that's there.
Yeah. No, and that's exactly it, is that there's this downfall, as they say, of Warrior, both in his career is definitely mirrored by, yeah, these claims and these, even like you said, just the way that he's, I don't want to say, it's really this kind of this confusion between Jim Helwig and the Ultimate Warrior. You know, this not understanding the difference and again, coming not, and I think that in itself comes back from not being a fan. And, you know, I don't want to say that he was a mark for himself, but there's just this uncomfortable confusion between, like, man and the character. And the really sad part is that he claimed the complete 180 of that.
That's the
nobody
thing.
Nobody understood the difference between myself and my character better than me. And it's like,
well, but he did say his character was him, and all his stuff just turned up. He did say that. And he also did say, though, that when somebody would be interviewed by somebody, do a shoot interview or something like that, and they would ask him questions and memories and whatever, he would accuse them of being marks. You're a mark. You can't expect me to remember that. That took place forever ago.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and it's John Cena was the Ultimate Warrior mark.
Yeah.
He said
it. You know, when somebody's interviewing you, and especially they're paying you for it, you know.
Well, I remember that High Spots interview, and he's just like, I don't know. He's like, you tell me then. It's like, well, you're being interviewed about your career. So, like, was this a surprise question to you about who your first match was against? Like, seriously? Like, come on. So, yeah.
When you call a guy who's interviewing a mark, that's just highly disrespectful.
But like you said, Warrior gets fired at the SummerSlam, right? Comes in, paid, gets some. And that's the one thing that you can say about him is that as much of a businessman as he was, he's not. And this is, like you said, with the mental stability and part of this, whether it's superstardom too fast, whether he's not being able to handle it, the confusion between the character and reality.
One thing I will say, he's only 30 years old, and he's probably an immature 30 because he was a bodybuilder and a jock and a whatever, right? And he's only 30 years old, 31, when he's doing this. So, I mean, he still is young. And, that would reflect upon his maturity to some degree too. But then, like I say, the other stuff and the things that he was ingesting. Also would affect his ability at the levels he was ingesting it.
Just, paranoia, right? Yeah. And especially when people are you know, trying to get rid of him. And, you know, I mean, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you to a certain degree, too. So that heightens things a bit, right? So I could see, him really trying to clutch for some things. And, again, not being a fan, thinking short term, I'll just make more money and get out, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, but again, he's gone for 7 months, makes his return at WrestleMania 8 in the Hoosier Dome.
Mm-hmm. You know, the funny thing is when he was gone, like he had that match and then he was just gone. And they didn't even write him out of storylines or mention him. He was just never mentioned.
Well, yeah, because they now focused on Sid Justice.
Yeah, and I never missed him. And I never even realized he was gone. Like he was just...
No, exactly.
You know, and when he showed up, I was like, oh, there's Warrior. I forgot he hasn't been around. Like, it wasn't that same, you know.
We're not clamoring like we are for CM Punk.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's a matter of, and again, because they transitioned to Sid as this guy, you know, as this big jacked up guy, right? Mm-hmm. That was the sort of the thing. And I mean, you can make as much, I mean, you could compare douche levels of the Ultimate Warrior and Sid if you wanted to. I don't know if anybody has.
Maybe they have. I got to admit, that blog I wrote, I actually considered after his passing taking it down. And I thought, no, that's not representative of who he is, which is what I want to do, and which is what I'm hoping we're trying to do here. And if I'm sounding I'm hard on him, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to be honest.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing he's not a – you know, he talks in his Hall of Fame speech, you know, I was a good person. Well, no, you weren't.
Yeah, you know, he said, I was a good guy. Well, we're going to get to more examples, unfortunately, and I wish it wasn't the case. But that doesn't mean that's – like you, when you say I don't consider him one of the top 10 stars, but I still think he's iconic, and I still – I mean, this gimmick is important. And the thing about his gimmick, when you say talk about him being one of the top 10 stars, and I argue no, the reason I would say that your argument is right is because of all the people who are current wrestlers, who that's the guy who got them in.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking top 10 stars. I'm talking Q rating, and just, you know,
charisma. He was definitely up there.
Oh yeah, but I mean, just walk down the street, right? Name me 10 wrestlers, right? You're gonna get the Ultimate Warrior's name pop in there very, very often. And I think that, and then before he passed. I mean, now that he's passed,
one of the top 10 most recognizable, I would have had no problem. One top 10 biggest is different.
You can argue what the definition of it is, right? But we'll.
But anyway, so he comes back, WrestleMania.
So anyway, he comes back, WrestleMania, and again, now he's thrown into my favorite angle of his, Papa Shango.
Mm. Mm. Classic.
Just wrestle crap on a stick. You know, and just, you know, brutal deal, and it immediately, again, like the one thing I remember, and again, I watched every week Superstars and Challenge, you know, and then the WrestleMania, like Sid and Hogan are having their match, right? I have no idea why Papa Shango's out there.
No, I know.
And it was never explained in hindsight. It was never like, why the fuck is Papa Shango there, right? Oh. And then all of a sudden the Warrior comes back, and now he's fighting Papa Shango. And it's like, okay. You know, at least if they had done something with Shango and Hogan or something to
explain. Yeah, it was but really anyway, odd when he came out there during that meeting.
It was Sid and Shango,
was really billed as Hulk Hogan's retirement match. I know, yes. I know. But this WrestleMania 8 was really billed as Hulk Hogan's retirement match.
It was, yeah, you know? It was. And again, and now you had...
the idea was at the time, Vince thought, let's turn him into Babe Ruth and have him wrestle very irregularly because he's past his prime.
Well, no. The
plus, he was going to do some movies.
No. Plus, there was a steroid trial.
Well, there was that.
And Hogan's name was very much linked, so let's get him away from the company for a while.
That's the big thing.
That's the big thing.
That's the right. That's the big.
So
then, so all these.
So then you bring in Warrior.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to dispel the steroid myth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was a much smaller Ultimate Warrior.
You know, and people, this was started the rumors that the Ultimate Warrior, the original Ultimate Warrior,
I never
died.
Heard that till years later.
Yeah, and because it's Kerry Von Erich in paint and da da da, and I didn't hear it till years later because he cut his hair.
Yeah, but it was pretty obvious it was him to me.
I always thought so. But yeah, then you started hearing this. Is this the original? You know, yeah. And I remember going to university, and like my buddy Styx emailed.
You're educated.
I know.
Hard to believe.
Yeah, it's you know, and it's Harvard. But I think that it was my buddy. I remember I'm just arguing because, yeah, he's like, no, the original Ultimate Warrior. And I'm like, no. I'm like, Jim Helwig, Warrior, it's the same guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, no. And I was like, are you stupid? Like,
but a lot of people believed it because he was smaller and because he wore this, you know.
Airbrush split thing.
Yeah.
Or
with this definition. But, yeah. You know, I mean, as awful as the thing with Paul, with Papa Shango was, and
that goo, that evil goo.
It was terrible. And they said it was because, you know, I think that Charles Wright, who played Papa Shango, did a great job as the character, but everything was stupid in the gimmick. And some of that's Warrior, you know, and his bad acting, too, and different things. But, I mean, the guy couldn't really be – he could – there's very few guys that actually carry him to those great matches. So you had to distract the audience from his weaknesses with this other bullshit.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you had that, and then you led to talking about matches. The weird part is that he goes in this, there's this curse of Papa Shango, and there's all this shit, and then he's fighting Randy Savage at SummerSlam.
And Randy Savage at the time, babyface, has returned, gotten the title off of Ric Flair and
Mr. Perfect,
Bobby Heenan. They're all playing in this while these two babyfaces are facing each other at SummerSlam. You know, and this to me is, I think, a better match. You know, it didn't have all the drama, but I think as far as a wrestling match was better. I love that SummerSlam 92.
It's the SummerSlam you thought you'd never see.
That's right, because it also had Brett versus the Bulldog.
That two babyface matches on top, right? But you had that, and of course the gimmick was Flair, whereas whose side is he going to be on? Mr. Perfect's going to manage one or the other, and it turns out neither, of course. And then you had that, and then you had Razor Ramon coming in at the same time.
That's right.
Debut Savage losing the title back to Flair because of Razor Ramon's interference. There, so he's caustic. So now you've got Savage. So now you've got the, what they call them, the Mega Maniacs against Ramon and Flair at Survivor Series.
And the promos were incredible.
And the promos were incredible. Talk and about these were really, with Hogan gone.
I mean, let's face it, Savage was something in his promos too, a little out there and intense. And so.
Yeah. And they had the matching glasses and the thing.
Yeah, and it was like, it was the red and yellow.
Yeah. And these were the two guys that were supposed to carry it from Hogan.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, because I mean, Hogan and him were the Mega Powers, right? So now you had the Mega Maniacs.
Mega Maniacs, but you had you know, Warrior and Savage as these two top baby faces. And then Warrior gets fired for steroids, for the drug testing policy that they come out with, right? Him and Davey Boy, right? Get fail and get canned, and you got to replace him with Mr. Perfect. And then that was Ultimate Warrior's – he was gone. I don't even remember how they explained it.
They didn't.
Well, they
had
to.
Oh, no, wait. He was – I think he was – I think it was an injury angle.
Yeah,
they did an injury angle.
They had to, because then they did the stuff on primetime when Perfect finally accepted being the partner, right?
Yeah.
So, but Warrior then didn't come back until WrestleMania 12.
And again, part of it was he failing, but also part of it was, again, he was a pain in the ass back, you know, he was being his usual self.
Well, part of it, I mean, exactly, was that here's a guy, this is a way to take and say we got a high-profiled guy. We that's expendable in our minds because he is such a pain in the ass that we can say and we can prove that he's on steroids. And so now for our drug testing policy, we can say, look, we've fired the Ultimate Warrior.
It was written that he was doing $5,000 a week in steroids. I mean, you're looking at $250,000 a year on just steroids. You know.
Yeah. So, and then
and again, he doesn't deny that he was using them.
No, exactly. No, he's never denied that. And that's the thing. But
and he
talk
did
a little
start
bit about
to get bigger again after the between the time of that Survivor Series and the SummerSlam. You started to notice him getting bigger again too.
You did, because again the airbrush stuff was gone, and yeah, it was sort of in between. Even at that SummerSlam, he was bigger than he was at when he came back at Mania.
Yeah.
Like he just basically came back at Mania and then he started to get bigger again.
Yeah.
But I mean, talk about a little bit of what Warrior did in that time between, you know, WrestleMania or the Survivor Series and WrestleMania 12.
Well, yeah, sure. Set me up for that. You know, I mean, the thing is, the WWE really largely moved on from him. The style of wrestling changed, you know, very much between from the time that he and Hogan were on top. to the time when, after the steroid trial, you started to get a guy like, you know, a guy like Bret Hart, obviously, and even Shawn Michaels became the focus of the company. And so the wrestling style of the fans got used to changed vastly. So when they moved on from him, and, you know, he was gone for a long time. They were trying to get him into at one period during that, because it was we're talking about between 92 and 96. The WCW, Hulk Hogan had eventually left after all those steroid stuff and everything too, and ended up in WCW. And they were trying desperately to get the Warrior in there. And for whatever reason, largely because, I mean, at one point it looked like they had a deal with Warrior, and at the last second, you know, he reneged on it, or he asked for more stuff, and they thought, you know, he was just being too much of a pain in the ass. But in large degree, they had WCW, which had Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage, already in many ways started to advertise that the Warrior was coming. You know, they're saying things like, you're going to see the ultimate surprise, brother, and all this different stuff. Because they did think they had a deal locked up with him until he made his additional demands. Or the ultimate weapon, I think, is actually what they were using, what they were referring to him as.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, they had backed themselves into a corner, couldn't get him at that point. You know, I mean, he did a couple matches. I think he wrestled, like, on the indies, Hercules Hernandez once, and, you know, Honky Tonk Man, stuff like that for some of these indies or in Europe or whatever. But, I mean, the WCW introduced a character called the Renegade. Yes. It was named Richard Wilson. He was about 5'10", and so, I mean, Warrior's like 6'2". And, you know, he was awful. And,
oh, yeah.
You know. I mean, he had wrestled for a couple years earlier, but he wrestled just like the Ultimate Warrior. His music was like the Ultimate Warrior. His promos were like the Ultimate Warrior. And he was managed by Jimmy Hart. And this was...
The hair, everything.
Everything. And this was one of the biggest missteps of 1995.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they gave him the TV title, beat Arn Anderson.
Yeah.
I mean, and yeah, he was again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was it. I mean, Hogan, yeah, a few times again with Savage, they were always promoting something ultimate was coming.
Yeah.
Right. And it just, and again, that's Hogan. One of his, knowing A at the time that he'd never got the win back,
mm-hmm.
brother.
That's one of the reasons he wanted to do that. In, yeah.
Well, and the fact that when in Hogan's, you know, this is one of the biggest stars that he ever faced as well. So when they're bringing guys back like Savage and Hogan, you know,
yeah.
The Warriors is a logical step as
absolutely
well.
It was.
Right?
And like I said, it looked like they had the deal with him. So, I mean, yeah. Unfortunately, I mean, this guy, you know, like you say, he beat Arn Anderson and defeats Arn Anderson or Paul Mr. Wonderful warned off in like 8 minutes or something like that in his longest matches and starting to have longer matches. Eventually they realize that this isn't working and, you know, they have, Paul Orndorff beat him, you know, just in like a minute. And yeah. From there he becomes just a jobber and he sticks around with them to 1998. He jobs out to guys like, you know, Lex Luger and Goldberg. He's one of the guys he beat on the way up. He changed his look a little bit. Yeah. He changed his look a little bit. And, unfortunately,
well, a lot of it actually. He kept the hair, but everything else the paint was gone.
So Richard Wilson then, unfortunately, while still employed, or he might have just been released. I think he was released, but he committed suicide in '99. I think it is.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, he's almost like a little side note to the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, and as you said, and then you know, WCW takes off. Right, or gets
some momentum. You know, it has Hogan. It has Savage.
Nitro.
It's starting to do well.
Luger.
Despite
Nitro.
The Dungeon of Doom, it's starting to do well.
There's competition though between
serious
WWF and WCW for the first time. Yeah. So Vince now again looks back to Warrior to try to help him out. And again, now this is the Warrior's longest stint. It's going to be, say, 2.5 years since – or 3.5 years, is it?
Well, it was 92 to 96, so yeah, 3.5 years. I think we're looking at 3.5 years.
Till anybody had seen the Ultimate Warrior. And it was also – this was the time where, like I said, people are you know, I'm having arguments with people that it's the same guy and it's not a different, you know, there's only been one, and, you know, things like that are coming up, right? And so I look at Warrior's name. I do remember being mentioned quite a lot, like in WWF Magazine, you know, they every once in a while put a question like, where's the Ultimate Warrior? Yeah. And then the answer was always be like, we asked Randy Savage and he doesn't know.
Yeah.
You know,
things like that.
So, it, you know, they maybe did that two or three times while he was away, you know, just the name was there. Right. And again, people were asking because, you know, he was a big star and all the other stars are gone. So where's this guy? And that was Vince's mentality too, where he comes in. I mean, famous line from it, you know, when he's walking up to Triple H, he says, you know, what's your finisher, kid? Cause I'm going to kick out of it. Mm-hmm. You know,
and Hunter never forgave him for that for years. For many years, he hated him for that, which is ironic because one of his best friends in the world, Razor Ramon, used to walk up to like Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero in WCW and say, hey, what's your finisher so I can kick out of it? But even to be an even bigger dick, while he was doing it and he'd have them against them, they wouldn't realize it. He would have pulled his dick out and take a piss on their leg. And that's Hunter's friend. So it was okay then, but as long as somebody's not doing it to me, I'm the game, pal.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, that's the thing. And he come back, he squashed Hunter at WrestleMania 12.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the thing about it was they announced him through vignettes, but we hadn't seen him.
Yeah.
So there was great anticipation. And then he came in and they literally beat him in just seconds. You know, how long did that match go? Do you know?
I don't know. I want to say a minute 12, let's say.
Okay.
You look it up. I'm going to guess a minute
12. I'm looking it up right now. A minute and 40 seconds. You're pretty damn close. Yeah.
But
just a squash.
I mean, yeah, just a squishy squash. But the thing was then.
But Helmsley at the time was a guy who, yes, there was talk about him winning the King of the Ring and this and that, but he was really a, he's not a jobber. I mean, he had actually, I don't know, was he undefeated up until that point?
Probably was. No, he wasn't. He could, no, because he lost to Duke the Dumpster. No, that was the next year. So he probably
was
undefeated.
I think he was an undefeated wrestler who had come in that for
but not,
4 or 5
not
months.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a newcomer that had come in over with vignettes over the summer, probably debuted in, you know, August and then, you know, kind of thing. But the thing was, Warrior come back. He was, Hunter was expendable at that point.
The thing is, they saw great potential in Hunter, but I mean, again, having a guy lose one match to a guy like the Ultimate Warrior WrestleMania, it doesn't really kill him.
No, because he hadn't been placed. I mean, you could have killed him and then started the rocket, which is what the plan was, because he was going to do that, win that King of the Ring that year. But
until the curtain call.
Until the curtain call. And then you move on to, I mean, the thing with Warrior in this run is it's like, you know,
he faced Gold Dust for the IC title, but didn't win it. Won by count out. Never had another match.
Yeah.
Like,
then fought Lawler.
Yeah.
And I mean, they talk about it in the Self Destruction DVD. I remember that one where, Warrior comes out and wears a hat.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it just, and they're promoting Warrior University.
Yes.
At this point as well. And, you know, learn how to be a wrestler from the Ultimate Warrior. Mm-hmm. And the planes of Destrucity
mm-hmm.
come into play
now,
with this.
He's saying they can teach you how to be a wrestler. Though he largely was saying he was going to teach you more how to find your personality and your whatever. But he really never – he took money. He really made no attempts to really run the school, you know, and essentially kind of rip people off. And the same thing, I mean – Destrucity.
Well, that's a wrestling school.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding, eh?
I mean, Shawn Michaels, I mean, he was barely at this Texas Wrestling Academy.
At least
he had
like, a great trainer there.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, for every one that's, you know, that's a success, there's 10 that aren't and are rip-off jobs, right? So Warrior, but you would think, but Warrior with such a big name.
And he brought, well, that's the thing, such a big name. And he also brought back Warrior University many years later, tried to do it again, and did the exact same thing to people. Destrucity, by the way, according to his comic book that he wrote, which came out about this time, about the same time as this, 1996. And I want to talk a little about the comic book because one of the co-hosts of – well, not anymore, but former co-host of We Talk Comics, Distrucity. This is.
I understand it's been taking off now.
Distrucity?
No, no, We Talk
Comics.
Got
more popular when I left?
Yeah, yeah.
Should I leave this show?
If you want.
Distrucity. Trifold in its definition, therefore meaning, one, the name of the galax and warrior wherein the terrain of testament lies. Two, the living of one's life in the way of a warrior according to a warrior's disciplines. Eight disciplines.
Eight disciplines.
Those are as follows. One, physical. Two, beliefs. Three, moment of mastery. Four, attitude. Five, commitment. Six, association. Seven, integrity. And eight, wisdom. I know. Notice how many of those did he show often? Let's just go through it. Physical, he showed. Beliefs, he showed. Moment of mastery, I'll give him that. Attitude, for sure. Commitment, yes.
He was committed to himself,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and he was committed to working out.
I believe he was committed.
Yeah, he should have been committed. Association?
No.
Integrity? Well, no,
the One Warrior Nation?
Wisdom? Anyways, and the three, the creating of a truce between one's destinies and one's reality, promising to stay true to whatever one is destined to be, yet accepting what is the now, one's reality. That is what Distrucity means.
Yes, does it?
It should be an Oxford, if it's not already.
Yeah, an Oxford moron. But, I mean, again, that goes back to
Webster's,
like this gerbil, this garbage that was coming out of his mouth at that time.
Always
right?
Believe.
This is his this is him at kind of, I don't call it rock bottom, but like stuff like this is where, you know, people that are still, I mean, and wrestling in 1996 when the Warrior came back, you know, some people were watching, but I would say half. You know what I mean? Like this is we're hitting a bottom period. The boom period of 92, let's say, is over. And we're about to head into another one on WCW, but not with the WWF. And so when this is where, again, when people talk about Warrior being known for being an idiot, you know, he is to some people, but it's not as if he did this in 1989 where lots of people were watching, right? If he'd done all his career 5 years earlier, then he'd be known a lot different to the massive public, I believe, than he is. But you know, and I know, and again, it goes back to like, you know, when he's fucking up Santa Claus in the comic book. And,
well, that's it. Yeah. I mean, he has this comic book. Jim Callahan is the penciler and inkler. And early on, he says, I mean, in this comic book,
the inker,
in this comic book, it's that the Warrior's created in this galaxy far away and ends up on Earth. And somehow there's an alternate Warrior that is created that's like his polar opposite. And he's trying to make a connection between that you have to defeat yourself in order to achieve your potential. But the thing's just batshit crazy. And he's got this penciler working on it called Jim Callahan, who in the first issue he says, you know, thank God for you. Without you, this never would have been ever been possible. Look, exact quote. And Callahan, you know how I feel about you, my friend. The fact that you get it and were willing to do whatever it takes. All these are in quotations, by the way. Get it.
Yes, of
brought
course.
To life what others in the industry will soon recognize as perfection and standard setting, quotations. Nobody could have even come close, period. Okay, so that's issue one. Issue four starts with the sentence, Callahan is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And apparently the guy had gotten ill and fallen behind and had stated for his family now he couldn't work regularly and he had to give up his regular job, and if he wanted to do this for Warrior he had to get paid more, and Warrior's like refusing, so Warrior had to get in a different artist, and so he spent four pages of small text in the back that you can't read because then he put art and stuff like that over it, talking about what a piece of shit this man is instead of just moving on. That's Warrior.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, that was the Ultimate Warrior in 1996. And, you know, he's,
But then he did come up with other issues. Basically, a small storyline about him saving Santa Claus, but it was largely also, like I say, there's a bunch of pinups by a few better known artists. And him with Santa, and there's one where Santa's drawn up, is like tied up in a dungeon, but better yet is the one which has him putting on his pants naked and a Santa in his bikini shorts lying on the ground looking like he just fucked him. Like he just raped him, actually.
Oh. Good for Jim. I know. But I mean,
queering doesn't make the world go around, though.
Wow. That's,
we'll get there in a bit.
But that does. Well, and this is it, where it starts to really, you know, when he's got.
So why does he leave 1996? What is WWE's story and his story?
Yeah, well, he was supposed to, In Your House International Incident in Vancouver, was supposed to be the Ultimate Warrior, Ahmed Johnson, and Shawn Michaels against Vader, Owen, and the Bulldog in a six-man match. Remember on Raw, and this was how you found out that Raw wasn't live, was the comes on saying that Gorilla Monsoon coming out saying that Ultimate Warrior did not appear for his contractual performances and therefore were suspending him. And I believe this was a Warrior Bulldog match.
I think so, yeah.
Warrior Bulldog or Warrior Owen, I can't remember what it was, but one of the two. It was happening, and so they'd already taped it, and then Warrior didn't show up. His story was his dad passed away.
Yes. Now his dad walked out when he was 12 on him, and his mother raised him alone, and he loved his mother like Mr. T. And
yes, well, not as much.
Nobody
as
does.
T.
But I love but your I, mother. I do know but, that. I mean, just when I'm paying her.
Well, she calls you Mr. Teabag.
Okay, I'll leave that in there. But anyways, no, he hadn't seen his father, I guess, in like 10 years or something like that. They weren't exactly close. He says his father left, and he no-showed, and that's why he no-showed and said, and he blames the WWE for not being more supportive. And of course, WWE's like, well, you hadn't seen the man in 10 years. And you didn't tell anybody. You didn't make arrangements saying, okay, you didn't say to us, can I make this shot and then leave? Can we make arrangements? You just didn't show. So I understand both sides here. Mm-hmm. I think both sides have a fair point here. So of course, then he was, like you say, they replaced him with Psycho Sid because you never bring a knife to a gunfight. It's Sean's.
Well. Yes, and you also, whenever you hire a warrior, you always have Sid waiting in the background.
Yes, tell me if that seems familiar. Yes, he was – warrior was replaced by Sid.
But, I mean, and I do see both points on this. But, I mean, again, it's the fact that – I mean, warrior ultimately – I mean, the fact that he'd vanished. I mean, the company really had no choice.
They had the international incident. I mean, the heel team went over. I think it was the next night on Raw or the next week on Raw, Warrior came out and was attacked during a match by the three of them, and they laid him out for like 5 minutes, and that was it. He was gone. They just destroyed him, and he was gone. And so they made sure to put him out, I guess he put over people on the way out? I don't know how you'd say it, but.
No, I believe that was, again, that was a pre-tape, though, to lead toward, they kept that in the can. That was billed for international incident. That they just played after it to say this is them beating the fuck out of him and now he's gone.
And Warrior, of course, shows up on the internet riding a motorbike with the statement about his father and giving a finger to the camera and a WWE sign or WWF sign or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it's one of those
– And lawsuits, of course,
Warrior not. Yeah, but Warrior not in his right mind again. I mean, it's just it's one of those things that
with his father, I can understand not being in his right mind. I mean, he didn't go about it the right way, but here I can understand to some degree, like I say.
I just again, when you look at
whether you've seen your father or not, there's going to be emotions. It's got to be.
there's definitely going to be emotions.
There's also a level of professionalism expected.
Well, and that's, again, where this sort of selfishness comes in. And now with things like the internet and more access to information, the sort of the public knowledge or the public display of the Ultimate Warrior. And really, this is the Ultimate Warrior being at kind of his biggest public mm-hmm. babiness. That, you know, like, what about me? It's all about me. Yes, okay, your father died, but, you know, taking no responsibility for not contacting, for then hashing, and this is, again, where he rehashes out a lot of the past issues, and it's like, they did this to me, and they did to me, and they did this to me, and it's really when, if you're following the business, you're in some ways learning about this stuff yes. for the first time. And finding out about it, and again, that's part of you know, the Warrior's lasting legacy, right? Is this, you know, he was in the business for himself.
He was in life for himself.
We'll get there too, but you know, so then he's gone again.
He's gone again.
He's gone until he just come back for the Hall of Fame.
From WWE, he's gone again. He did end up in 1998 in WCW. Finally agreed to go in, though. At the time, WCW was making a lot of money and doing very well, and WWF at the time had even surpassed them and was making even more money. They had the Attitude Era going.
That's right.
But both companies were going great. And when it was found out that he was going to be going over to WCW, you know, I mean, Vince tried to bring him back. As he described himself, a glutton for punishment. He was worried. Despite the fact that he had Steve Austin and The Rock and Mankind and all these guys, and despite the fact that guys, they already had those old guys, he was worried about Warrior going there. Which is, I think, shows a level of respect for what he sees the potential of the Warriors being.
Yeah, and he'd always thought very highly of the character, right? I mean, it's – and I think he respected the – I mean, in many ways, the Warrior and Vince are similar, you know, in terms of their – I'll call it their stubbornness.
Well, yeah, they have very similar personalities to some degree. You can't tell either one of them.
No, exactly. And I think there's a respect there too. But – and just a matter of, you know, is this – you know, the tide had tipped to – WWF, but not
it was close still. There were still weeks where, like, there were still like weeks where Nitro could beat them. Like, it didn't, you know, it was like once a month they would still beat them, and it was still, you know, could still tip the other way.
Well, and this was a situation where, like. Yeah, the tide hadn't tipped yet, so they were still, and it was a quarter hour win for Nitro.
Well, it did a huge, you know, Warrior a huge comeback. Rating.
It did the Warrior comeback. People knew the Warrior was coming back. I think I had it on video cassette still somewhere. The Warrior coming back, and Warrior decided to go on, and you can see it in Eric Bischoff's eyes during this promo. It's the disciple, Hulk Hogan, and Bischoff in the ring. And then all of a sudden the lights start going and smoke enters the ring. And then Warrior comes down and is like, oh, my God, it's Warrior. And it's the Warrior. And he gets in the ring and Hogan's selling. And then
– yes. The best line is he talks about Warrior and who he is and Bischoff. And he goes, and let me guess, this is your barber?
This must be your barber. And the thing is earlier on Nitro, because they were having a War Games, a three-way War Games match where it was NWO Hollywood, NWO Wolfpack, and Team WCW. And the winner of the War Games would then go on and fight Goldberg at Halloween Havoc for the WCW title. Diamond Dallas Page, the captain of Team WCW. And I'm trying to remember. I think you had Hogan and Bret Hart and I don't even remember who the other in thing. But and I don't remember who the other WCW guy was. But DDP's coming out.
I think you're right. Yeah.
But WCW, you know, DDP's going, and just wait later on till my cat gets here. The next guy on Team WCW, he's coming. I called this guy up. I asked him, what's your phone number? No, but he said, he's like, I called this guy up. This cat's jacked, and he's coming tonight, right? So he said this promo that DDP called up Warrior, convinced Warrior to come in, and Warrior's coming in to seek revenge on Hogan or BWC. Anyway, the thing. First thing Warrior says, and different than you want to make people believe, I come here out of my own accord.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And it's just like, for like one of the first sentences.
Yeah, of course,
comes
he goes in business for himself.
Like, oh, for yeah. 20 minutes. And it's just, you know.
He got a great reaction. You know, drew a great quarter, but it was only once.
Well, it was only once. And then you started the One Warrior Nation, the OWN.
Same Warrior Time,
the NWO,
same Warrior Channel. But I mean, of course it's only once because you start doing things like he's kidnapping the disciple and hypnotizing him and bringing him under his thrall. And,
yeah.
And like the storyline, and he added a level of creative control. And
yes, and the warrior,
yes,
in the mirror.
When you have a man who is nuts have a level of creative control.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you get what you get, right? I mean, you get Warrior in the Mirror.
The disciple being,
And Horace Hogan.
Yes, this was the thing that was really awful. Yeah, Horace Hogan, that was just bad booking. Hogan hits him because it's his nephew to show that he'll do anything to anybody. And then he comes out and helps Warrior Hogan right after that. It makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly. And it's... they had one of the, is WrestleMania 6 is considered very much overachieving and having a great match in expectation level. Halloween Havoc was the exact opposite.
And I mean, you had Goldberg versus DDP and a match that they had set up for a match they had set up for a long time and they were kind of the co-main events. And thank God Goldberg versus DDP over delivered because that was a tremendous match.
Once people saw it on Nitro, because the pay-per-view went over and nobody actually saw or very few people that night.
This match is really, really
DDP
odd. But again, it allowed Hogan to do what he wanted. He got his win back. Then Warrior comes out, cuts a promo the next night on Nitro. But, I mean, he's not around much longer. Like, this is it. He's kind of just – he's brought in.
No.
Paid $1 million to work for 3 months to lose to Hogan, and then he sits at home, continues to get a paycheck. Best job ever.
Yeah. The one Well, and the one thing that it did give, was you had Warrior and Sting against Bret Hart and Hulk Hogan on Nitro.
Because you know what? You'd want to just throw that away on Nitro and not build it up. That's not a big match.
Yeah. No, and it didn't draw a big quarter, which is the funny part, right? Like, it was one of those things that it's like, you know, again, WCW's starting to grasp its straws at this point, too. But... I mean, so you're right. The Warrior then leaves, has just a one match, the other part. I mean, the Halloween Havoc. You talk about the trap door, and
because they
and
used
the
to
Bulldog,
the gimmick was would come up and then he would have disappeared from the ring. Again, they're trying to build that he had superpowers because he really wanted to be a superhero, and that was in his comic book. And unfortunately, like you say, this led to a tragedy with Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog.
Yeah, British Bulldog and Ultimate Warrior intertwined a few times throughout their this story here, but this was the one, and then hurt his back on the trap door and in a match against, I think it was Alex Wright in a Disco Inferno with him and Anvil, right? So that led into some other problems. I mean, Davey Boy had problems already, but that further complicated some problems that he had. And, like you said, Warrior then, I mean, there was talk of, building his next program or doing whatever he's going to do, and nothing ever came of it, and he just kind of sat at home.
Yeah.
And then again, that was his last appearance, was that Nitro on wrestling television to a large audience. He'd come and he'd do a talk at the University of Connecticut at UConn.
Yeah, that was amazing. This is at the one. Now, he was billed as a conservative and showing up. He wanted to do motivational speaking and different things, but you know, and be a political speaker and get all this. But and you know, I continue to blog. I continue to be on the internet. There's out there. This is something that I think should be mandatory reading at ultimatewarrior.com /soul_reading_teach. And it's his philosophies, the social philosophies and resolutions and who owns it. The discipline and principles, not mutually exclusive. And he's got a bunch of great things he says, such as social Darwinism, this arena of thought that held society operated on the rule survival of fittest. This was used to explain economic differences between the rich and the poor. Some people use it more recently to attack capitalism that as a producer is necessarily exploitive. That person holds social Darwinism implicitly or explicitly as a premise. So just this type of crazy stuff. So he shows up at UConn to talk about this, and at one point makes the statement about queers. Queering doesn't make the world go round.
Well, yeah, he got a couple of it was question period after his speech, and at one point he was making fun of a guy wearing
a turban. Well, what happened was, a guy asked him a question who had a turban on, and he didn't like the question. He says, "Go get a towel." And like I say, somebody else brings up something, and he says, "Queering doesn't make the world go around." And one woman lets out a gasp. And to me, this is almost even more offensive. He goes, "Don't have an orgasm on me here, honey." Like, it's a level of arrogance and you know.
What he's trying to do with this arrogant character – and again, I think this goes back, and I really do, to the steroids and this like lack of reality grasping that he has, is that like he's coming up trying to be this motivational speaker. So in his mind, and I mean I understand, in his mind he's thinking, okay, what do all these motivational speakers have in common? You know, there have to be people that have got it together that are talking to a bunch of people that don't have it together. So I got to be acting like I'm better than them, right? But what he doesn't understand is that the motivational speakers are humble, are better than the people they're talking to, but humble. And he never got the humble part. And so when he's up there, I remember that. "Don't have an orgasm on me, honey." I just remember thinking, like, you don't get how to do that.
And the thing is, he sent out he released something called the Warrior Workout. And it was, he charged $200 for it. And if you got the kit thinking you're going to get a Warrior Workout and learn how to become a warrior, you open it up and it's a 75-minute audio recording of the warrior yelling motivational things at you. But there's no actual exercises in the kit. There's just that tape and a foundation essay, and it talks about setting the record straight on where your head should be, your exercise head, as he called it, should be when you're working out.
Yeah.
And he put in there, and this is an exact quote, "Do not disregard my instructions that you must have 3 hours of unobstructed time before you open the start kit to review the materials." So you need 3 hours to review this 10-page book and 75-minute recording. That you charge them a bunch of money for this. It's again, it's like, are you kidding me? Of course it flopped.
And you could tell in his, you could very much tell in his Hall of Fame speech, extremely jealous of Diamond Dallas Page.
Yes, absolutely.
You know,
but Diamond Dallas Page gets all these things that he doesn't.
And, yeah, exactly, and he's made fun of DDP yoga and his thing, or tried to make fun of it, but again, none of his jokes at the Hall of Fame came through. And again, that talks to him as a motivational speaker as well, is that he just doesn't
a motivational speaker in that setting. Though we will get to a little bit more later, but of course he's also doing things. He's doing things now. Saying things, it almost seemed like he was saying things desperate to stay in the public eye, but then he would just disappear. So there was that shoot interview you watched on Hogan where he talked for an hour.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
I didn't see it.
The Hogan story, I remember that. And it was like he hyped it and hyped it when it was going to be like ultimatewarrior.com or whatever it was, warrior.com. So this was his way to launch the website and get people there was, you know, I'm going to do this webcam thing on, and I'm going to spend an hour shooting on Hogan. I don't remember if I watched it all, to be honest, because it got to be very shockingly repetitive and nonsensical, and that, you know, he basically just, you know, said things like, "Oh, you're oiling up your daughter's ass, and your wife looks just like your daughter, and then your ex wife."
But the thing, yeah, exactly, and you know, but the thing is, it didn't make sense to me from, like, it didn't seem to be setting up a match. So what was the purpose of it? It was just
to draw people to UltimateWarrior.com.
And again, he made comments after Hurricane Katrina. I'm just going to read a few of these. And again, is it because he believes this, or does he just want to draw controversy? Does he think controversy creates cash, or a little bit of both? But he wrote, "If we could show them what general conditions they lived in before the hurricane, we would see that they had little respect for what they have. We would see just how unorganized, unclean, and dysfunctionally they lived. They never gave a care for order, cleanliness, or function before, but now that they have someone's attention, who will possibly take over the responsibility of their life for them? They go on these tirades about how their life is being ruined. Their life is already in ruin, self-ruin, ruined by bad choices they made over and over." The amazing thing is that he doesn't see that he himself has done this. He's made bad choices over and over that have led to him. Like when he walked out in 91, yeah, he got paid that $550,000, so he probably got paid like twice what he would have gotten paid. But he also threw out a lot of money from those 7 months that he would have made even more, right?
Yeah. Well, sure. But, I mean, he's never hurt for money. You know what I mean? Like, he's never been in that situation, at least not, you know, in his professional
life, I mean,
life,
is he,
right?
Does
I
he
mean,
have the money of some of the other guys? No,
we can talk about his money that he walked away from. But, I mean, and it's true. But, I mean, he made a lot of money as well.
He made crazy money from WCW. They said at his death he had a net worth of about $1.5 million. So not a crazy amount for a guy who was a star at this level, but not, you know, I mean, you know, nothing. Not like it's not nothing. Anyways.
Yeah.
More of what he said here about Katrina, he said, "And they are fat. Have you ever seen so many fat people? Poverty? Poverty of what? Having enough to buy so much food to eat that you become a beast? This is poverty? Only one TV? This is poverty? A house with a roof over your head? This is poverty? Indoor plumbing, electric appliances, refrigeration, phones, cell phones, computers, designer clothes made by rap stars, $200 Nikes, free medicine and medical care if you really need it? Is that having all this poverty? What the hell do we call the scenes they shoot out of Africa that they use to lay guilt trips down on all of us?" And then these came – this is – keep in mind, this is New Orleans he's talking about, where he went into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And then he said this. And this is – he takes it to even another level. "They claim New Orleans was or is a great city. Maybe it once was. I don't know. Two, it's always been – maybe it's just always been as corrupt for years and years. Truth is today it was nothing more than a pornographic cesspool of decadence and depravity. You know, an East Coast version of what Las Vegas take on vacation time. What do you do there stays there. You go there, drink and drink and drink, behave like a pervert, reprobate and degenerate, take a huge dose of antibiotics and a nice long shower before you go hop on the plane and back home. And hey, who knows any better? You go back to church, PTA, and local council and squarely fit right back in. One thing is for sure, if New Orleans was ever a great city, it certainly was not because it had leaders and a citizenry like the leaders and citizenry it has today." So,
yeah, again, just, you know, general, just, again, more of the same, right?
This is what he said about Martin Luther King. "Martin Luther King is his own self-titled birthday, recognized as a national holiday, but not our country's first president. Should I go on? Let's see if I get this correctly, or should I say, let's see if I can get anywhere near a correct understanding of this piece of nonsense by first understanding it. Martin marched a few times from Selma, Alabama to Montgomery, Alabama. It's only about 40 miles, and he walked paved roads with security escorts and modern comforts and conveniences. He wrote a few jailhouse letters, plagiarized a great many speeches and played up his last name King as if he was one." I don't know. He's
yeah. I mean, again, he's got some very. But I mean, there's again, he's got a public forum for this, but I mean, there are a lot of people in the United States that believe exactly what he just said. So
yeah.
I mean, I've heard that before, not from Warrior.
Let's
put it that way. And I don't agree with
it. Here's what he said about Heath Ledger,
right?
On his death. In the interest of full disclosure, I must tell you I've watched Brokeback Mountain no less than 45 times, and I loaned a limited edition DVD signed by Willie Nelson a short time after he wrote that Queer Cowboy song as a tribute to the courage of the producers and actors who broke such incredible creative ground when they made their agenda-less movie. Serious. Until I saw Brokeback Mountain, Braveheart was my favorite movie. But the love scenes of Brokeback sucked me right in, and I had no choice but to give myself over to the passion of his wide range, if you get my drift. Such courage this young man and his colleagues have reminds me of the courage of classic movie stars, where during the war they enlisted and flew bomber planes and fought on front lines, then came back and picked up their lives and careers right where they left off, without any anti-American sentiment, whining or complaining, or self-destructive indulgence. I'm equally inspired. By today's standards, though, I do have to agree he was a great father. Perhaps even greater than the father of the year, Hulk Hogan. After all, Heath Ledger, or Leather Hedger, as he calls him, did what it took to kill himself. His kid is without a father, yes, but the negative influence is now removed, and his own child has the chance for a full recovery. I mean, that's cold, dude. That's cold.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and again, he goes into that. That's part of that sarcastic tone that, you know, he was doing with DDP and with Ted DiBiase at the Hall of Fame too. That's his thing, right? That's what he finds funny is that nobody else did when he was up there. But again, you talk about there being a time and a place for everything, right? And I mean, yeah, like when he's talking about yeah, Heath Ledger did everything that he could to kill himself. Well, guess what? He did. So, I mean, there's truth there. But you talk about there being a time and a
place.
But
you talk about that. That's true. But you don't talk about how that's good for his kid. How that's a better thing for his kid that he's going to grow up without that guy around. You know?
No. That's the cold part, right? Yeah. No, but that's his opinionated thing. That's people keep talking about this the whole time that they're talking about this, but like that's Warrior. That's consistent with him. And that's the man, right? There's no necessarily a filter. He doesn't give a shit. And as I said, he's the one thing he'd say about the Ultimate Warrior, if you want to know what he thinks, he will tell you.
No, oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that I really admire about him is he never, ever, even if I don't agree with the beliefs, he never, ever cowtailed his beliefs to somebody else. He never compromised who he believed he was or should be. He stood for those beliefs despite them not being popular, and that's not easy to do. Now, like I say, I may disagree with the beliefs, but there's something to be certainly admired about that.
Well, the admiration is there from that perspective, but the one to play devil's advocate and say, you hate to bash on a dead guy, right?
Because we're just trying to be honest.
The one thing I will say about the Ultimate Warrior is that the reason that I was always very critical of him in his life and I guess will continue to be is that he is a very shining example of he's someone that was able to dish it,
that's for sure,
but he could never take it. And so, I mean, he talked about how in his Hall of Fame speech that DVD hurt me. They said mean things about me. Right. Well, okay. So, but you're allowed to say mean things about everybody, but no one's allowed to
say
them
these
about
things
you.
About the people who lived in and were going through this tragedy of Katrina. You can say these things about Heath Ledger and his kid, but nobody can say them about you. And this again is why the lawsuits.
And you could say these things about Hulk Hogan. And Hulk Hogan.
Let me tell you something. Hulk Hogan even said
in the
Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior. He even said, "You know, I like Jim. I do. He's a good guy, but sometimes I just think he didn't get it." Like, Hulk Hogan really didn't slam him like the other guys did. Not like Ted DiBiase did.
Yeah, no. Not like DiBiase or Flair, yeah.
No. And but, when this, and no, again, and that's, when I mean, this many people it, feel this way about you who worked with you and knew you, at some point it's not you or them, it's you. To him, it was always them, it's always them, it's
exactly.
always them. No, at some point it's not them, it's you. Not when it's everybody.
No, that's right. Exactly, right? I mean, it comes to the point was, how is it that everybody but you is wrong? Well, they're not, you know. And you know, but, you know, I like go back. I mean, there he was, and this was his time off and what have you. But then, you know, just recently now, going into the Hall of Fame and what, you know, in rewatching the Hall of Fame video again kind of thing, and I'm watching it with the producer, and I think the agreement – you know, the consensus between the two of us was, you know, when he comes out with his girls, you know, and that I think is the, you know, different to the opposite of what he said about Heath Ledger. You know, that's, you know, the real tragedy here is that he had and these girls very late so in much. His life for children. He did. And they're young girls that don't get to grow up without their father.
Yeah, and he was dedicated to them. And, he said he always made them look him in his eye. And I think he was extremely honest with them. You know what? I mean, it's very sad. That part is very, very sad. And
that, I mean, it's one of those, I mean, and you even saw it. And you didn't feel that it was an act when he was talking, you know, didn't I tell you girls the type of show that Mr. Yeah, McMahon puts on here? Didn't I tell you that, you know? So, I mean, it's is the sad part. And I mean, the closure, though, that it comes.
Well, I mean, when he's announced the Hall of Fame, what do you think?
I don't know if ironic is
we've heard rumors for a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I told you when he'd signed that that 2K, mm-hmm. when he did the video game, I said, like, this is opening the door now for him to main event the Hall of Fame. And I had said that, you know, whatever it was in the last summer when he'd done that, when they'd announced that. I said, I fully expect him to main event the Hall of Fame, and he did. And you look at, again, this is more of the – and he had signed, you know, they'd released or didn't renew the contract of Mick Foley – to be the ambassador, spokesman of the company, the brand ambassador spokesman, and Warrior had been hired to do that. Like, and when you listen to everything we just talked about, and then you compare that to Mick Foley, and who do you want as your brand ambassador spokesman? You know? Like, who do you want talking on
the
behalf
of your
company?
I'd rather
have Foley. I mean, a three-time New York Times best-selling author? You know, or queering to make the world work. I mean, let's look at the history.
But I mean,
right?
I mean,
people did say a lot
of things
people
that were Triple H, Paul Levesque. I mean, he worked really, really hard to put his feelings aside, and Warrior worked really hard to put his feelings aside to get this deal done. And this is a good thing.
Oh, it's a very good thing that he was able to have his moment, his Hall of Fame moment, his moments on Raw. I mean, that, again, just in such in hindsight to that, you know, every heart beats its last beat and every the lung breathes its last breath. And it just – and then, like, the next day.
The thing is, though, I mean, he did seem to be – I mean, everybody talked about he did shake people's hands and hug people, and he was so happy at the Hall of Fame, and he was nice to people. One of the things he talked about in his speech, and I really believe this, is he really did want to help younger people, help younger wrestlers, and just younger people in general. I don't think he knew how to do it. When you say, I am a good guy, I am a good guy – he was messed up, and that kept him from being a good guy. But I think inside of him there was a good person that didn't know how to always present himself, because I think really do truly believe he wanted so much to help those people. On the other hand, when February 4th on his Twitter, when Philip Seymour Hoffman dies, he writes, enough already about dead heroin addict. You use TV time for stories of heroes who sacrifice lives to protect all celebrity junkies' freedom. Again. And, you know, I mean, I even understand, because I think it's crazy how the news cycle goes on and on and on with a guy like this after his death. But that said, again, there's a time and a place. You know, you don't say it. And there's a way you can say it. Like, you know, you could have wrote on Twitter, feel bad about his death and his family, but it is time for the news to move on and show some other stories. That's fine. You know? Cool.
Yeah, I mean it. Yeah, it's.
Even up to the end on his Twitter, he was saying a lot of offensive, crazy things.
And yeah, exactly. He's still, and that goes back to, you know, he's not going to be shy about sharing what he thinks about anything.
No. No, he's not. So, I think we've covered it pretty damn good here. We've gone on forever. And what we're going to do here at the end is we're going to give you even a little more. There's a show called The Warrior Show, the pilot episode with a band called Asking Alexander, another one with a band, the second episode, band called I See Stars, and some up-and-coming bands. And he did these, I think, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It's him trying to motivate these kids and kick them in the ass. It's like a boot camp type thing. Trying to get these kids with this great potential to be musicians to reach their potential. And he's pretty awesome in it. That said, he's also overbearing. I mean, this is sometimes funny. It's sometimes overbearing. It's sometimes too much. And sometimes he's incredibly unlikable here, and sometimes he's incredibly likable. And even though it's a visual thing, I think the audio actually gets enough for it. And if you don't want to hear it, we're going to tack it on at the end here. You can turn it off. But I think it's a very very accurate portrayal of who he is as a person. Now, I will warn you, even by the standards of our show, he uses a lot of F-bombs. I mean, I think there's probably in this 50 minutes, like 500 times. It's crazy. Yeah, it's unbelievable. So, even by our standards, I'll warn you of that. But I think it's interesting. So, I mean, try and listen and see if you enjoy it. But what are your final thoughts on The Warrior?
Well, I mean, it's...
And his actual death and how he died. We never talked about... Of course, it appears to be a heart attack is what...
Yeah, I would. Yeah, and I mean, you can all, until there's an autopsy, I mean, we can all speculate.
Which was done on Thursday, but we don't have the results of. But I mean,
yeah,
I think it's fair to say when you ingested the things that he ingested, it did shorten his life. But he wouldn't change that. I also know he wouldn't change that because it gave him the chance to be the warrior.
No, that's just it. In terms of the warrior, how I remember the warrior, again, I always looked forward to seeing him. Like when he was doing his comebacks and things like that, it was like, okay, the Warrior's coming back. I got to check this out. He he's one of the biggest stars in one of the biggest eras that wrestling has ever had. So he did that. I mean, the fact that, I mean, it's just, I don't know if it's ironic or poetic or what, but I mean, in terms of coming full circle, I feel as you talked about after WrestleMania that there was a family feel to it when you had, you know, Rock, Austin, Hogan in there. You had Ultimate Warrior coming back. Is it, you know, this is Bret Hart was there. I mean, is a family, you know, Flair. All the big stars were there, and it's a family atmosphere, Bruno and such. And so now, you know, it's a good feeling that Warrior was able to come back in the family. You know, and it's almost like that that closure in wrestling that he come back before he passed away.
Well, I'm glad it happened before. And I think there will come a point where at some point, it'll take many, many years, but where his daughters will look back at that night and be grateful that it occurred as well.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, and this Wednesday on the network, there's going to be, it's called like the ultimate look, or it's
and there's so
Warrior,
many
the ultimate legend is special. That's
Monday will
Wednesday
be
night.
Monday will not be a normal Raw. Monday will be an all tribute show.
Yeah, and if they're gonna have matches, and you know how, and I thought of this too. I mean, I think the perfect tribute to the Ultimate Warrior is, you know, normally they wear band, you know, the black bands when someone dies. You know, mm-hmm. the armbands. Mm-hmm. They got to be black tasseled armbands.
I think something like that would be perfect. And again, it'll be interesting to see how they handle it. But as far as, like I say, influencing people, getting them into wrestling, showing the excitement, the character, the showmanship, the entertainment aspect, all that stuff that draws in a little kid and makes them want to grow up and be one, he had a huge effect on this generation, the people that's in that locker room right now.
Now let's go and let's maybe play a bit of a just as we go with Raw. How do you feel about Raw as Warrior?
I think I hope that they're trying. I hope that it is a little odd to me just because, again, there is enough about him that is not necessarily portrays him in the best of light. So just sit here and to just, you know, try and present him. And like I say, there's been a lot of podcasts out there and tributes doing it. And we're trying to be a little different here.
Well, we're not trying to be a little different. I think we're trying to we're being honest.
And, trying and to be honest.
I don't want to say that the other ones lack that, but you can't look at him with rose-colored glasses, especially given, like you said, like you've been able to point out, and I don't want to, you know, have it come across that it's just sort of you bashing him. But I mean, those are the things that he said.
I had a little more time to do some research on it, is the thing.
Well, that's the thing, but those are things that he said. Those are, I mean, those are facts, I guess is the best way to put it, right? It's not an opinion, it's not, but those are facts, and formulate your own opinion based on those facts.
Exactly.
But I mean, yes, he's an iconic wrestler. He's, you know, and he
but yeah, I would be a little offended if it's just a show presenting him as this great guy. I mean, everybody, when they leave their job or when they, or they pass away, they're just, everybody, it's a great guy. And it's not right to say, speak ill of the dead. And you're right. I don't think it is right to just bash somebody. I think it is right to be honest about somebody, though. And based on that, it's just one last thing I want to read here. And this is from page 257, 258 of Bret Hart's book, which was a book that was, I think, one of the best wrestling books.
So that was the chapter one.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much like, but one of the better books and certainly very honest. He wrote, most of us wish that Hogan would come back and reclaim his crown. I got to see exactly what kind of champion Warrior was during a show in Omaha. Propped up on a stretcher a few feet outside the dressing room was a Make-A-Wish kid who looked down to his last few hours. There was not a hair left on his head, and not even his Warrior face paint could mask his sad eyes. Sale pickly and barely breathing through a ventilator tube, the boy wore a purple Warrior t-shirt and green and orange tassels tied around his bicep to honor his hero. His mother and father and an older brother and sister were with him, patiently waiting for the promised encounter with the Ultimate Warrior. I bent over to say hello, as did all the other wrestlers on the way into the dressing room. It was odd, but there was Warrior actually sitting with us. He usually kept to himself in his private dressing room. By the time the third match started, a WWF public relations rep poked his head in and politely asked Warrior if he was ready to meet the dying boy. Warrior grunted, "In a fucking minute, I'm busy." I thought to myself, busy doing what? Talking to a bunch of guys you can't stand anyway? As the night wore on, the family waited just outside the dressing room door, the boy hanging on to his dying wish to meet his hero. As I returned to the dressing room after my match, I was relieved to see that they, weren't there anymore. I assumed the kid's wish had come true. Warrior's entrance music played while Jim and I quickly showered in hopes of beating the crowd out of the building. We'd have to hurry since Warrior never went over 10 minutes. Sorry, your dog there. Said, we'd have to hurry since Warrior never went over 10 minutes. We dressed, grabbed our bags, and took off. As we rounded the corner, we found a backstage ramp. We came upon the boy and his weary family, who had been moved there to not get in the Warrior's way of his entrance. I thought, that lousy piece of shit. He made them wait all night, unable to summon the compassion to see this real little Warrior. Hogan, Randy, and countless others, including Andre, never hesitated to take time to meet a sick, dying kid. My disgust for the Warrior magnified 1,000 times. To me, he was a coward, a weakling, and a phony hero. And I think that's pretty damning, what Bret Hart wrote. Hard to hear, and I'm sure while there's always two sides to a story, it's hard to understand where the other side would come from. And unfortunately, to me, that's an image of who he was. Not who I wish he was. Not, I don't even know if it's who he wishes he was, but it is an image of who he was.
Yeah. No, and that's, I mean, they get down to Ryan. I mean, Bret Hart, did come out and made his statement as well about.
His exact quote was, "It's really ironic the way he died. It was almost like he willed it or something." Hart said on Wednesday. He wrote his own ending. So.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just...
I don't know. I guess at the end of the day, I wonder if this is a happy man, and I kind of see him as a tragic figure, but that doesn't mean I can necessarily excuse everything. But there are things to admire, but there's the other part too.
Well, he does say, I mean, Bret Hart does say, "I wish I'd been kinder to him in the last moments that we had this past weekend at WrestleMania 30. We crossed paths once or twice, but we were all so busy I never went out of my way to see him. But if I could, I'd tell him he looked good, he looked content, and he looked like he'd finally found happiness with his children and his wife. He never ever harmed me, nor did we really work with one another. I wish we had. His final ring promo breaks my heart. I have many fond memories of the times we shared. Not only do they pile up in my head, I've also tell him he was right. He never was such a bad guy. My thoughts are with his wife and children. I never thought this time would be so short. I know one thing, I'll never forget him.
Well, that's great irony in contrast to what was in his book. Yeah.
No, and that's the thing, and that gets to be that, I think, a bit of the rose-colored glasses as well. And, I mean, when people pass away, you do think of some of the good times because, I mean, no one – I shouldn't say no one, but hardly anyone is 100% bad. You know what I mean? Like you said, Warrior probably had a good guy. A lot of people with the Hall of Fame were saying how different he seemed with his wife and children. There, you know, but just in terms of with the company. So, but you know, it's definitely a sad thing anytime, you know, anytime someone, a father, you know, passes away and leaves away two children. It's definitely a sad thing. It's sad from a timing perspective that the Ultimate Warrior just coming back into the fold and back in with the family of WWE
because he was kind of. Because a lot of the reasons for him to have his bitterness had gone away here, and because he was a little bit older, I would have loved to have seen the man he was in 10 or 20 years. You know? I mean, because who knows?
Yeah. Well, exactly.
Who knows what kind of man he could have become, how good a man he could have become.
Yeah. And just unfortunately not getting that that chance. So, but that's about it. We'll see how Monday plays out. We'll be back on Thursday with sort of the regular.
Yeah, I wanted to take this following show. Week up, but off. But it's not going to happen. We have too much to talk about. So I'm warning you with peace and love. We have too much to talk about. So why don't you do the plugs, and then we'll end it with the two Warrior shows. They are available on YouTube as well, but hopefully people enjoy or get something out of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's WeTalkWrestling.com. We're at We Talk Wrestling on Twitter, you know, facebook.com/WeTalkWrestling, and you can subscribe on Stitcher and the TuneIn Radio app as well as iTunes. So an email your thoughts to Addie@WeTalkWrestling.com. So, that would be wonderful. So unfortunately we had to have this, had this show, but hopefully people found it at least a little bit, informative, and we don't get too much hate mail on it. But
yeah,
maybe
even it'll help some people find some closure, because maybe they themselves are not sure how they should feel about the Warrior, and because that's kind of how I feel. I'm not sure how I should feel about him. The way I want to feel isn't necessarily the way I feel I should feel. Maybe they will. But with that, I think we're OUT. We'll throw that on at the end.
I have tons of fond memories of the performer, but not as the man. And I think that's kind of the way to kind of summarize everything that we've just talked about. So just fast forward to this, to like 2.5 hours in, and you'll get the summary. So, all right. Well, that's going to do it then. So in the meantime and in between time, that's it. Another edition of We Talk Wrestling. Good night, folks.
I'm the one and only original creator and performer of the Ultimate Warrior. The truth about me is actually much more than what you think you might already know. The truth is, Ultimate Warrior was simply an external amplification of me and who I was. Today, Ultimate Warrior is a pop culture icon. The things of greatest value that came out of my success in the business were not the fame, the celebrity, the money. What was priceless were the incredible life lessons, mentoring and inspiring the young creative people of today's generation to do the work it takes to make a masterpiece of their own life is what interests me today. Using my unique, one-of-a-kind intensity and passion for life to have them grasp that real power comes from owning your life.
Let's go, brother!
Mind, body, and soul. So it is that I present to you, I Am I, the Warrior Show.
And at 10 o'clock at night. It's my birthday in 2 hours. What's this all about? Happy birthday, Ben! I don't want to go out for my birthday. Oh, fuck, I don't want to do this. You have to stay hydrated before you exercise.
You got a bottle over there?
I feel like I'm going to shit water.
This is still a workout. Is anyone else, now that they're here, really nervous?
Warrior, how you doing?
Hey, Danny.
Danny, nice to meet you.
Hello, mate, Ben.
Ben, nice to meet you. Hi, what's your name?
I'm Sam.
Sam?
Yeah. I'm James.
James, nice to meet you. Hi.
Randy.
Hey, girls, you got to find something else to do. I just need the guys. Come on, let's go.
Oh, my shoes are in the car.
I'm going to tighten these up.
Have a seat, man. Take a breath. I want to talk to you guys for a few minutes. What is that, whiskey or wine?
Wine.
Wine? Take a big swig of it, man. Show me that you can drink half the bottle.
I'm not going to chug the whole thing. It's going to last.
Can you?
What?
For what, through the workout?
No, it might.
That'll last. You can lick it back up. Did you guys, you start your careers over there in the UK?
No, we flew over here.
So you just decided as a band that you were just going to go to the States and you were just going to start that way?
Yeah, just hit it hard.
I know, I lived in Walmart car park in an RV that mine and Danny's parents bought us.
Yeah, I've done some of that, man. I've slept in the car a few times and stuff too, paying the dues and everything.
Yeah.
How often do you talk to your mom and dads?
I only just started talking to mine again.
Didn't have a relationship with them?
No, kind of. We had fallings out and never really got along. Then we just started talking again.
Why'd you have a falling out with your mom and dad?
We just never got along as a childhood. Never saw eye to eye. I always had authority issues. I just always rebelled and.
That's the same as every kid, though. You just were a pussy about it and never grew up.
What's your goal with the band? What's your goal in life? What do you want to do with this band? I mean, look, when I think about my career and what I did as Ultimate Warrior and how I created the character, I was always thinking about it all the time. How to make it better, how to make it more appealing to people who are going to buy tickets and t-shirts and all that stuff. So I'm interested to know, do you think about that in your way, that you're an artist and this is your life, this is going to be your fucking life. You're going to go on and you're going to continue to produce music.
I don't write music for the fans. I don't do this for anyone else other than myself.
Let me ask you about that, the music. What is heavy metal to you?
It's just another name for rock and roll. Mm-hmm.
Which to me is a lifestyle, passion.
You guys aren't so innocent anymore. You've had some experiences. You've reached a certain level.
We were very naive when we came into this.
What about yourselves that you don't like? Changes that have happened to you that you don't like?
I don't think anything. Every bad decision we've made, every wrong turn that's come along the road has made us what we are now. And if we hadn't have made those decisions, we might not be sat here. We're not a positive band. We're not a happy band. Our music is inspirational, but in a don't do what we've done kind of way.
You like being fucked up all the time?
I definitely.
Or fucked up most of the time? Or getting fucked up? Do you like how you feel the next day and stuff?
I don't often feel too bad. I mean, don't get me wrong, hangovers are horrible and come downs are terrible. But I enjoy it.
You guys do any exercise at all?
On stage show.
Oh, really? You think that's exercise?
Our
after this, after we do your workout, you have to come on stage with us.
No, I don't have to go on any stage. I've been on stages. I don't have to prove anything to anybody anymore. Do you think your body or your health, how you're able to animate yourself and perform on stage is important to what you guys do?
Not physical stuff. It's just like things in your head.
It's hard to be creative or even productive when you just, your head's not in the right place.
So it's important to get your head into the zone.
Yeah.
Exercise is a good way to do that, man. Exercise has been a big part of my life. Look, for you guys to be the best creatively, you got to be able to kick that shit out. Get rid of that inner dialogue.
I'm having the time of my life.
But do you ever think if you just keep indulging, doing what you're doing now, I mean, do you really think that at some point in time it's not going to cost you in your music careers as artists? You just don't believe that, or you just don't care, or you're willing to take that chance?
I don't believe that. I think it will keep inspiring me. At the end of the day, we're working hard, we're playing hard, and we're also helping people. And
we're just being ourselves, and we're writing and playing rock and roll music.
I'm not in disagreement with the way you guys are handling things. But I will tell you, based on what I know from seeing people around me that I've known in my life drop like fucking flies and are 6 foot underground now, well, if you continue down that path of just abusing your bodies and stuff, your creative skills are going to go away. Certainly the lifestyle on the road doesn't lend itself to fucking being healthy and fit. But you need to take care of your bodies, man, and get some exercise, even beyond the stage.
Does sex count as exercise?
Probably not when you're all fucking drunk, because you probably don't last too long. You probably don't do much fucking. But your girlfriend is such a mark for you guys, she won't tell you how horrible you are in bed.
Do they last long in bed?
You guys are so on top of your game, then this is my suggestion. Let's see this. This is a challenge for you. Exercise your body, become the best that you can physically, and then fucking engage all the booze and alcohol and drugs that you want to. See if you can do both. Because if you can't do both, you're not the monsters that you think you fucking are, and somebody's fucking better than you are. Well, we're going to do some exercise here, put you through the paces. You going to run in those fucking cowboy boots, John Wayne? You guys can sign the waivers. And I want to see those fucking physiques, man.
What do these waivers say?
They say that if I paralyze you, kill you, fucking die, I can just throw you in a ditch. Yeah, he told me about that, man. That's cool.
So I'm saying, I really haven't changed my values as a person whatsoever. I never will.
There you go.
Nice body, Danny.
God bless vodka!
How do you find it? I feel like I'm at school doing PE again.
I'm ready. Can I smoke a cigarette first? I'm gonna have one with you, Danny.
Should we do this?
After this.
Let's do it.
He said I had time for a cigarette. I'm smoking a cigarette. So he can like come out and hit me. He's an intimidating kind of guy.
You guys like to get a buzz with the pot or the coke? Get into some exercise where you get your heart rate up and you get your blood pumping. Call the runner's high. You guys have experienced that. You probably get that, you know, when you go on stage and you do your fucking gig.
I feel like I'm his target. Yeah. He didn't stare at anybody else. He stared at me the entire time.
Like when you guys are hungry and you stop at a fucking place and you eat the junk food, what happens after you eat it? Feel like shit and you get tired.
All of this.
Food is a drug. And when you're young and that happens to you when you eat that bad food and it affects you that way, it rises your insulin levels and it knocks you out and you go to sleep. Your body can overcome it, but over time, man, it starts having a really negative effect on your creativity and everything else.
I might lose this. Fuck, it's bleeding. I cut it off earlier in the week. They managed to stitch it back on. People are like, oh, is that bad? Is that scary? I've got 9 more.
All right, guys, line up. We're going to get started. Look, when we sit down and we talk and I listen to you guys and what your ideas are and what you're thinking about as a band and where you're at in your careers, I'm not in total disagreement with that stuff. You got to do things differently than every fucking body else is doing them. Because if you don't, then you're not going to be fucking different. You're not going to succeed in the huge way that you want to.
But what you have to do is you got three things to work with to make it happen. You got your body, you got your mind, and you got your soul. And your creativity as artist comes from your soul, not in your heart. Your heart is a fucking organ inside your body. Inside your soul, you gotta believe that you can fucking achieve the goals and dreams that you have, or you will fucking fail. And if you don't believe that 24 hours a day, it's not gonna fucking happen. You gotta have the fucking stamina. The stamina. And as long as you keep abusing your body with alcohol and drugs and no exercise, you're going to develop weaknesses and you're not going to be able to do it. What about by the time you get there using your strategy that you engage this fucking lifestyle on the edge of self-destruction because you think it adds to your creativity? What if by the time that formula works and brings you a platinum album, what if by that time you're in a fucking stupor and you don't even know what the fuck's going on? And everything you make from then on isn't yours to have ever. You gotta be on top of your fucking game. And one way to do that, one way to get there, one way to develop the fucking discipline is by beating the shit out of yourself and your fucking body. Pushing it to its fucking limits. That's what I fucking know. You know what gets me? Heavy metal. I asked you what heavy metal was. Just another form of rock and roll. You know what I think's fucking funny? All the fucking imagery that comes with heavy metal. About the deepest fucking levels of hell and evil and fire breathing and bad fucking ass. And most of the people in rock and roll are just fucking punks. Just fucking punks. So we're gonna find out now just what you're made of. Just how much you've got in your fucking soul, because you know what? You drank a bottle of fucking wine. That's fucking disrespectful to me, you motherfucker. Maybe you are the chosen one, Danny. Maybe you fucking are. You been family first, right? Family first. Family means fucking tradition. Tradition. You play your game and you play it well. And you be arrogant and you be cocky and you be full of yourselves. You stick your fucking chest out and you pound it fucking hard when you have to. But when you know to mind your fucking manners, you mind your fucking manners. Those big fucking beasts. Those graphics on your t-shirts. How many fucking push-ups you think one of those fucking monsters could do?
Plenty.
Fucking millions. What about you, James? How many fucking push-ups can you do, man? That's fucking, you got big balls on that fucking stage, right? Get down and give me some push-ups. I want to see who can give me 50 fucking push-ups. If you got to stop between 0 and 50, stop as many times as you want. But I want 50 fucking good push-ups. You know how to do a push-up? Do them. I want you to live fucking powerful lives. I want you to be the best in the fucking world. I want you to prove all those fucking idiot haters wrong. But if you want to, if you really want to, inside your soul, then you're gonna have to pay a price. 50. I don't care how long it takes you. Don't fucking lie to me. Go! One more, let's do it. Alright guys, rest of you follow me out here. Put this around your neck. I like your fucking ideas about creating your own freedom. I'm fucking behind it, man. I'll support you all the way on that. But you know what you're doing in your life?
when you fucking indulge in the things you do, you're putting fucking chains around your neck. You're weighting yourself down. You're squandering and you're squashing out your own fucking freedom that you want so fucking bad. You want to do things your way all the time and tell everybody else to big fuck off? Then fucking go for freedom. All of it. Every fucking bit of it you can have. Because you know what? You get this one fucking life. This is not a dress rehearsal. Your life is not a fucking rehearsal. One shot, that's all you fucking get. Tonight at midnight, you turn 23. You know what? Tonight at midnight, Ben, for 1 second, it will be midnight tonight. You will never get that fucking second back. Never. It will be gone for fucking ever. And the sooner you realize that about time and what you want to do in your life, the bigger and better that you will fucking be as an artist. Now, run down and back with this fucking chain on your neck. Now, go. Don't stop till you get down there and don't stop till you get back. Camera crew, get up there. Get in front of them now. Another fucking chain. You want to be a fucking monster? Be it, body, mind, and soul. Every fucking thing. Go on that fucking stage. I saw that fucking belly. Rip that fucking gut into an eight pack. Look like a fucking god up there. Look like the fucking images I put on those t-shirts. Be something. On the Sled and Prowler. Leave the chains on. Go, push all the way. All the way through. Pull it all the way through. Okay, grab it. Somebody grab it and go. All the way through. All the way through the cone. Keep pulling, keep pulling, keep pulling. Good.
Oh. Fucking brutal.
For you, brother. You want to be the leader, you carry the chains.
Fuck this. Pretty intense.
Another chain. Another chain. Okay, let's go. Power. Let's go. Push it. Let's go. All the way through. The sled goes all the way through. Past the cone. Good. Go, go, go. Grab it, Danny. Go. Go, Danny. Go. Bring it fucking back. Heavy fucking metal. Here's some fucking heavy metal for you. Take another fucking chain. Take a chain! Let's go! Push! Alright, you motherfuckers, you don't want to fucking run? Then fucking right where you are, right now. You get the fuck out of here! You girls get out of here! Get the fuck out of here, now! I don't need you around here! Fucking silly! Alright, wherever you are, squats! Spread your feet about shoulder width apart! Start squatting up and down with the fucking chains, now! All the way up and down. Down, Danny. All the way. Ass to the ground. Let's go. 100. 100! There you go. Shit, you guys probably do 1,000 of those every night on stage. Right? Let's go. Why am I carrying these fucking chains? Somebody needs some chains. I'm the chain master. Come on, Cameron. You only got 2 chains, man. Let's go. Danny, all the way up and down. This guy in the back is going to be the leader. Fuck Danny and Ben. Guy in the back. What's his name? I forgot. Sam. He's going to be the fucking mastermind. He's going to rule the world.
Let's go, Danny! Oh, man! Everybody's getting fucking hot for you now! Let's do it! Up and down! If I can't get anything else out of you, I want your honesty. 100! All the way! Fill in your ass so you can get ready for the fucking that you're gonna get when you're not prepared!
It's burning.
Let's go, guys! Let's go, James!
I'll do my 100, man.
What'd you say?
I did 100.
Did you do 100? I didn't want to hear that you didn't do 100. That would have been fucking bad. Don't push my buttons this time. Last time I heard the words, I can't. I can't. A little peep. 4 more. You have it in you, man. Come on. Let's go, brother. 1 more. Good job, man. All right, everybody here, leave the chains on. It's obvious to me that you're having a hard time walking. You can't do any more squats, and running is probably out of the question. So, on your hands and knees. On your hands and knees right here, leave the chains on. Let's go. This way. Crawl. How bad do you want it? All my life, every single day, the first words that come out of my mouth, I want to be inspired. Fucking inspire me!
I wanna keep my fingers
off. If it falls off, I'll put it in my pocket. We'll fucking sew it back on. Let's go! Use your fist. I've been told that you have all the talent, all the God-given gifts to be the best in the world! Now I want you to have the discipline in body, mind, and spirit. Let's go! Let's go!
Good?
Yeah. Keep going! One paw after another. All the way, all the way, all the way. Line right up here for me. Up, up. Let's go. It'll be fine. We're not going to do any more calling. Line up. Face that way. Give me fucking everything you got. One more fucking run. All the way through. Hard. How many of you even know who I am or what I did? Really know?
WrestleMania.
Cameron?
Vaguely. Not.
James?
Old school wrestling videos.
When I was in high school, I was just a punk kid, man. I stumbled into the weight room one day. It fucking changed my life forever. And it still keeps changing my life all these years later. Every time I need to get my confidence back or my belief in myself about what I'm doing. Every crossroads of my life when I was before choices and challenges that I had to make that mattered, that would matter to my fucking life. I always went back to my body and I pushed it as hard as I could to find out what I was made of there. To realize what I could still be capable of in my mind. On a scale of 1 to 10, when I get to the end, my life would be about a fucking 4 or 5. And when I see young guys like you, I want yours to be a fucking 9 or 10, man. That's what I want. I don't know what you believe about your lives. I don't know if you believe that everything that's happening to you is just a mistake or just happenstance or just fucking fell out of the sky and it doesn't matter anything. But this is what I believe. I believe everybody has a fucking destiny in life. And if you come here and you stand at a crossroads every single day of your life, ready to make a choice about what you're going to do and to fulfill your destiny, you make the right fucking choice. And to make the right choice, you got to be disciplined in your body and your mind. A lot of people are talking about you guys having the creative ability, the musical talents to be fucking the best. Then you need to be prepared on all levels. And the toughest way to find out if you are is get physical. Use your body. I appreciate that you took the time to come here tonight. Let me meet you and hear your story.
And I hope you learn the right lessons in your life as you go on and you make the right choices and you do the right things. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Did a good job, man. Good job. You okay? Your finger? Very good. You take the chains off. All right. There you go. My real name is Warrior. It has been for 20 years. That's it, just the one name.
My name is Warrior. I'm the creator and performer of The Ultimate Warrior. And for years, people, young people, have been writing me about how to live inspiring lives, about how to be the fucking ultimate at what they do. It's 5:30 in the morning here on October 28th. I'm in a parking lot of a Motel 6. And somebody told me that there are some stars here. In fact, a band called I See Stars. And they have what it takes. They have a warrior inside of them to want to be super fucking stars. Starting right now. The Warrior Show. IMI. I'm going to fucking find out.
The Ultimate Warrior!
My name is Warrior. I'm the one and only original creator and performer of The Ultimate Warrior. The truth about me is actually much more than what you think you might already know. The truth is, Ultimate Warrior was simply an external amplification of me and who I was. Today, Ultimate Warrior is a pop culture icon. The things of greatest value that came out of my success in the business were not the fame, the celebrity, the money. What was priceless were the incredible life lessons, mentoring and inspiring the young creative people of today's generation to do the work it takes to make a masterpiece of their own life is what interests me today. Using my unique, one-of-a-kind intensity and passion for life to have them grasp that real power comes from owning your life.
Let's go, brother!
Mind, body, and soul. So it is that I present to you, IMI, The Warrior Show. I need the room numbers of IC Stars. I need the room number of IC Stars. Nobody fucking talks in here. What room is IC Stars in? You take a guess?
What are you looking for?
IC Stars.
IC Stars?
Yeah, the band. Where are they at? What room are they in?
Oh, man. 247, 248.
247, 248. You sure about that?
Yeah,
wake up, sleeping fucking beauty!
Boys, look at this fucking guy. Out fucking cold, man. I'm gonna have to drag him through his workout. Good morning, guys. It's fucking ultimate reality. The shit just hit the fan. Hey, guys. Wake up. It's time to get up. Smell the roses. Drink the coffee. Eat some eggs and bacon.
I was having this amazing sleep, and I was dreaming about something awesome. And then I wake up, and I see the Ultimate Warrior all up in my grill telling me that I have to get up and work out at like 6 in the morning.
Oh my God, it's going to be this hard? Let's go get some exercise. You guys going to get up? What, you got names? Devin, nice to meet you. Look, here's the deal. We're going to start taping a television show today, and you guys are going to participate in it. And if you go with me for about an hour and a half, you may learn something that will change your life. If you don't, you don't get your money back because you don't have to pay. Let's get up. You got 5 minutes. We're downstairs in the van. Hey, guys. All right, man. Super. Let's get on there. We're going to go for a little while. Appreciate it. All right. Thanks for the attitude. Been 5 minutes, man, ain't it? You got a watch? 5 minutes? You, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're ready. That's it, man. 5 minutes, not 50 fucking minutes. Here comes somebody. Is that one of the band guys? Thanks, brother. Good job. All right. All right, that's it. That's all we got. All right, we're ready to go, man. It's a motherfucker having some big asshole come in your hotel room this time of morning. Look at it. This guy's even giggly. Man, I remember the Motel 6s. Listening to some guy burp and fart all night, man, or something like that, not getting any sleep, moan and groan about something else. It's what we used to have to do when I first got in the business. We used to drive like 300 miles a night for 50 bucks. 300 miles one way and back the same night after the show just for like 50 bucks a night. To sleep in Motel 6s and sleep in my car a lot and stuff like that, and that's part of what you have to do, man. It may be hard for you guys to see it, but you're making an impression on a lot of different people, even at the young stage that you're at right now. And it's important to pay serious attention to that. Tell me where you're from.
I'm from, actually, it's not Detroit at all, and it's not too gangster. It's just a little suburb called Warren.
Oh, you're from Michigan. Yeah. All you guys, oh, that's right. Part of your story is you guys dropped out of high school.
I have my diploma.
You want my advice? He's going to fuck it up for everybody with that diploma. He's going to think he's got all the fucking ideas, all the formulas. Okay, truth test. What's the last thing you guys ate? Because, you know, something tells me we might just find out anyway.
Potato soup, cheese quesadilla.
Oh, man. Picasso can make a painting out of that mixture. Hey, did you guys get those Home Depot buckets?
No.
Fuck, then I hope you guys know how to use a mop. I think we're here, man. We're going to go inside. We're going to get started. All right, we're at this great gym. It's called Rise Above Fitness. It's owned by Brandon. He's hardcore.
Yeah.
Brandon.
How's it going?
I see you guys. Welcome.
My name is Brandon Schipetti. I'm the owner and head trainer at Rise Above Fitness. I spent a good part of the last 12 years on the road with my band Bleeding Through. One of the things that I always did on the road was keep myself in shape. There's always been that parallel of music and fitness for me, and I think it's so vital for all these younger bands to get in here and embrace a lifestyle of fitness so they can prolong their careers. Stay focused, stay disciplined, because if they stay disciplined in fitness, they're going to stay disciplined in music and vice versa.
Here you go. It's the War Zone! Game begins now! All right, back here, let's go. We don't want to waste any time. Look, there are things that I want you to get out of what we're going to do today, and you may not get them like I want you to get them because you're young. It's like when I talk to my 10-year-old daughter. I make my daughters look at me when I talk to them. They can't change the direction of their eyes. They got to look directly at me so I can see inside their soul. But I can see sometimes inside her head she wants to start rolling her eyes when I'm talking to her in a philosophical way. You need to be here. And in your head, you're not here right now. You're thinking about a million fucking different things. You're thinking about how my face looks right now compared to the picture of the Ultimate Warrior you saw. You're thinking about you'd rather be in bed than standing out here shivering. You're thinking about what's getting ready to happen in the way that I'm going to exercise your bodies.
You have got to be able to dump that stuff. I want you guys to walk down to that truck. I want you to dump every fucking other idea out of your head except being here and what's going to happen in this gym. I want you to forget about the girlfriends you have. I want you to forget about your family. I want you to forget about last night's performance. I want you to forget about today's performance. I want you to forget about that you fucking don't want to be here. I want you to run hard. And on the way back, I want you to run as hard as you can. And I want the fucking camera crew in front of them. If they fall down or something, run fucking over them. Camera crew, keep fucking up! Okay, camera crew's out of shape. Okay, here's the deal. I'm a fan of different kinds of music. And I gotta be honest, I listen to a variety of different stuff, and a lot of times I just like silence. And you guys can probably identify with that because you're creative people, but I like my own thoughts. I like my own ideas. Choices fucking matter. Nothing matters more than the fucking choices you make in your life. When you go in there, I want you to choose something to work out and exercise in. Not as a team, but by yourself. Pick up some weights, get on what machines you want, and let me see what your choices are. Just grab what you want, man. It's not about proving strength or setting any records. Your form doesn't have to be perfect. It's not going to be judged. I want to see what kind of choices you make, not just the one choice that you make.
Start off small.
There you go. Exercise should be fun. Oh, no. All right, guys, that's enough. Body, mind, and soul. Body, mind, and soul. You want to be the ultimate at what you do? You can't take any one of those three things out. You gotta use your body. This is the vehicle that takes you through life. People buy a car and they spend more money taking care of their fucking car than they spend time or money taking care of their body. I can see it in your eyes. I can see you rolling your eyes thinking, fuck man, I'm young, I can do anything. I can do back fucking flips if I want, man. That groupie 3 nights ago, I had her in the room. I was fucking doing her, and I was doing her fucking hard, and she was screaming and fucking yelling, and I was fucking King Kong. The day will come when it won't be the same unless you made the choices. And one of the choices to exercise. It's about anything. It's about yoga. It's about stretching. It's about kettlebell stuff. It's about using light dumbbells. It's about flexibility. It's about those type of things. For 45 minutes to an hour a day running, it will make your life better. What do they say about runners? What do they get when they get through running?
I don't know. My dad's a runner, and he says that he just feels like his complete body is just flushed out of all toxins.
There you go. It's called the runner's high. You guys are young, a lot of temptations, you're doing different things. No judgment of any of that. You want to get really stoked, you want to get really jacked up, you want to get really, really high, get fucking hardcore intense exercise. Whose cell phone is that? We're doing a little ceremony. All right, pick up that piece of paper. Just read through it real quick. Basically, it says if I fucking kill you, then I'm not liable for it. Okay, guys, give me your paper. All right. Now, you guys put your shirts on. My attention
is on you guys. Since I got home last night and I put my head on the pillow, my thoughts have been on you. About that, I want you to be fucking powerful in your life. You know why? Because it makes the world a better place for my fucking kids. When somebody takes responsibility for their fucking destiny in life and they do everything they have within them, everything that God gave them, not God through some stupid ass fucking Bible. God in the way that you feel it. God in the way that you want to inspire people. When you go out in front of those fucking crowds of people and you young guys go on a night right now making your way, that's something to fucking pound your chest about. And when you go out there again tonight and the next night and the next night, I want you to fucking remember that. That logo on that shirt means something to millions of fucking people all around the world that when I was at my career, I never knew it would. And it doesn't make everybody want to get up every day and be a fucking superstar. It makes people want to get up and just get through their fucking lives and think positively about their contributions. Now, none of you are into exercise, but you know enough about the basics. What do you figure the hardest exercise is to do?
Sit-ups.
I was going to say cardio.
Exercise, a weight exercise with the bar. Okay, let's make it more specific. What do you think?
Pull-ups.
Look at me. A weight exercise with a bar. Using a bar. It's got weights on it. What do you think?
Bench pressing.
You, Jimmy? Bench press, sit up, pull up, or squat? Which one would be harder?
Squat.
And you're right. I've been working out for 42 years. If you can only do one fucking exercise, you do the squat. If all you did was squat, you would better yourself in the body, mind, soul. For 20 years, I've been saying, always believe. Every letter, every correspondence I send, everything, always believe. You know, when I did that years ago, people used to laugh. They said, well, you think you're fucking Nike? Always do the hard things in your life. Never take the easy way out. Do them with a smile on your face. You've been smiling ever since I busted in on your room this morning. You need to keep that attitude. Always do the hard fucking things. Simple example, take the fucking stairs. Don't take the escalator. So what we're going to do, we're going to do the hard fucking thing, man. We're going to do the hard thing, man, because that's where you get big balls in life. Starting right over there. You ready, Brandon?
We're each going to pick an exercise.
After 30 seconds up, you switch exercises, okay? You're going to go 5 rounds, okay? So the first exercise we're going to do is squats, okay?
Get going. Out like that.
30 seconds, non-stop, down, up, okay?
Non-stop, table row.
Up, flip over, okay?
Nice and violent, okay?
Thrust your hips forward like that, and your legs do the work, okay? And basically, I'm going to time you guys and tell you to switch after 30 seconds, okay?
And go!
Good job. Keep moving the whole 30 seconds.
Switch! Go!
There you go, up. All the way up, Devin. Get out there on the power, Jimmy. Let's go! Good. Come on, Jimmy. Okay, somebody, you guys are still staying away from the fucking squat. We're gonna do squats. But we're gonna do squats this way. You put the bar on the back, and you squat fucking down, feet flat, like you're shitting over a hole, like this. You keep your back straight up and down, 20 fucking reps,
with the bar. And then I need somebody here just doing military press. Push up and down. You got two sets of dumbbells here. You just keep going. Devin, get on the prowler. 20 reps on the prowler. If you're standing around, fucking get on it. Let's go! Fucking dig down deep!
I can't do this.
No, yeah, coming on, not gonna lie.
The most difficult thing was the prowl. That first, you feel like you can do it, and it's not that hard. And then, like, the first turnaround, you're just kind of like, oh my gosh, my legs are vegetables. It's terrible.
You just got off the prowler, you get on the sled. Let's go.
I can't.
Fuck that, you can't. 52 fucking years I've been on this fucking planet. Fuck! 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 You know what they're gonna tell you when you wanna go to the fucking big stadiums? 100,000 people! I fucking can't! Fuck that! Don't waste my fucking time! Can't! Come on, keep squatting. This is what I fucking got and this is what I know. You don't stay away from doing the exercises when you need to. I admire what you gave, but this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna run fucking sprints. And we're gonna run them fucking hard. And I don't want no dog in it. All right, get lined up, everybody else. Get the fuck out of my way. Camera guys, run fucking backwards. Get some exercise yourself. We're gonna run sprints to the black thing. And you're coming back to here. And we're gonna go until I say we ain't going no more. Go. Hard. 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 Pump it. Let's go. Again. Let's go! Move your legs! Get rid of that shit in your system! You wanna be the best? Then act like you're the best! Let's go! Again! Don't stop until you fucking get to the goddamn black thing! Don't fucking stop! Fuck me! Motherfuck! Can't run anymore, crawl! No stopping! No stopping! Go again! You two are the fucking leaders! These are the guys that are going to be cutting your deal! They're going to have the fucking stamina to say, no more! I see stars! Does not take that shit! Four more! Four more! Let's go, guys! Jimmy, pick it up, you guys! Good, good, good! Let's go, run! Don't worry, fucking, we got cell phones. We'll call 911. A drop of fucking weight on your chest. That'll start things back up. Let's go. Let's go, guys. Down and back. Down and back. You got one more down and back. One more down and back. There's one fucking fan in the stadium who didn't get your soul. Show me you have what it takes to make them hear what you want to bring to the world. Great job, guys.
We kicked our ass, legitimately. I've never worked out that hard. I could have puked.
Fuck the buckets. These guys just fucking showed me that they don't need the fucking buckets. They don't need buckets. Fucking water bottles.
I could have gave up. I thought about it. He grinded you so hard, you can't. And he's scary. You don't want to fuck with him.
You see someone who wrestling arenas, played in front of 70,000 people, and went from sleeping in cars to being on the top. He really inspired, hopefully, the whole band, because right now we're in a point in our career where we're really fighting to make it that next level.
You guys on the stage, you fucking become masters of your fucking performance. I mean, motherfuck, man, my whole performance was built on using my body. Every time I meet somebody who doesn't have their physical fitness act together, there's something fucking wrong with them, man. They're missing something. They're not inspiring. People want to be inspired.
It was really inspiring, just about your life as a whole and being passionate about what you do and having a plan and a vision and understanding that every single decision that you make truly affects that.
You got to believe in yourself deeply all the time. That's how you become fucking icons.
I see stars did a really good job. There wasn't anybody really crawling or, you know, there's a couple people started puking, but they finished, and that shows a lot of heart. Hopefully this inspired them to maintain a lifetime of fitness. Fuck my life.
Is everybody here? You guys get over there.
Great effort by you, man. I mean, fuck, your fucking moccasins on. They told me somebody, you got the fucking moccasins. What are you guys, fucking Indians or what? But look, man, when you go through life and when you stay at fucking Motel 6, it's not like you see a lot of inspiring fucking people, you know? You know, you're sleeping two to a fucking twin-size bed. It's hard. I know what it's like. I know how hard it is to think that you fucking can be huge like fucking the bands and the mega fucking stars that you look up to. I know what that's like. I know what it's fucking like to sleep in my car in the middle of fucking winter and not have any money to eat anything except tuna fish. And to keep believing in yourself that you can fucking do huge things. And exercise will connect you to that fucking deep belief, man. It will. I appreciate that you spent your time with me today. And I'll be paying attention to what goes on with you guys in your career. Thanks again. Good job, man.
Thank you.
You know what I like, too? You guys shake hands fucking the old-fashioned way. I don't know the bumping fucking shit. I guess I'll have to learn it, though, huh? Good job.
Thank you.